going to try to get started. I know there's still some people filtering in, but we're going to start. We'll kick it off and then actually start reading names for people to come up and testify. So I'm going to turn it over to Ben Dobbs, our legal counsel.
Good evening. Thank you all for coming today. It's now 6:35 p.m. on June 5th, 2019. In accordance with a public notice issued by the Massachusetts Department of Energy Resources, the department hereby opens the public hearing on proposed amendments to portions of 225 CMR 14 Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard Class 1 or RPS Class 1 and 225 CMR 15 Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard Class 2 or RPS Class 2 regulations. This is the last of four public hearings that the department has conducted on the proposed amendments to the RPS Class 1 and Class 2 regulations. As stated in the public notice, the proposed amendments revise the RPS regulations to address policy-related changes, including required changes to the RPS Class 1 and Class 2 regulations in order to implement Section 12 of Chapter 227 of the Acts of 2018, now codified at MGL Chapter 25A, Section 11F. The purpose of this public hearing is to receive verbal and written testimony on the proposed amendments to the RPS regulations. As indicated in the public notice, written testimony will be accepted until 5 p.m. on June 7, 2019. This public hearing is being recorded and will be posted on the department's website. The department requests that, to the extent possible, parties also submit written copies of any testimony. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Mike Judge.
Thanks, Ben. Hi, everyone. I am Mike Judge. I'm the director of the Renewable and Alternative Energy Division at DOER, and I'm joined here today by Ben Dobbs, our legal counsel, Eric Stelzer, and John Wassum. So we're going to go through the list of people that have signed up. We have quite a few people that have signed up, I think probably a little over 50. And so given the amount of time that we have available, I think we want to move through these relatively quickly, so we'll try to set a limit of 2 minutes or so. If people start exceeding that, I may ask you to wrap up so that we can keep this moving. Do ask you to limit displays of approval or opposition to people's comments. We want to give everyone an opportunity to be heard in an equal and fair way, and it's really our opportunity to listen to your feedback on the proposed changes that we have made to the regulations. And as Ben said, we do have the opportunity for people to provide written comments. Those are due by Friday, June 7th. So give you an opportunity to make an announcement as well. So go ahead.
Estamos ofreciendo interpretación del inglés al español y por favor levante la mano si quiere escucharlo en español. Le puedo dar unos audífonos que vamos a estar interpretando. Por favor levante la mano si quiere escucharlo en español. We're going to provide interpretation from English to Spanish. So please raise your hand if you'd like interpretation. I can bring over a headset. Okay. Si luego quiere interpretación, voy a estar aquí. Puedo ayudar. Gracias.
Thank you. So to start, actually, I understand we have some elected officials here today. So I think there's some city councilors. I don't know if you'd like to get up and testify to start. I don't know if there's any other elected officials. If there are any, it's back there. Yep. So we'll let the elected officials go first, and then we'll read through the list.
Good evening, gentlemen. Welcome to the City of Springfield. My name is Jesse Letterman. I'm an at-large member of the Springfield City Council, where I chair the Committee on Sustainability and Environment and the Committee on Health and Human Services. I'm joined here tonight by my colleagues, City Council President Justin Hurst, Councilor Michael Fenton, Councilor Melvin Edwards, and Councilor Tim Allen. And also, we bring the regards of Councillor Adam Gomez, Orlando Ramos, and Tracy Whitfield, who could not be with us this evening. We stand before you to submit testimony in opposition to the proposed revisions to the Renewable Portfolio Standard that would allow for ratepayer subsidies to be granted to large-scale wood-burning incinerators in Massachusetts and the region. We stand before you both surprised and disconcerted that the state would be considering such an action in light of the clear empirical evidence that these types of large-scale generation facilities are inconsistent with the Commonwealth's stated goals for greenhouse gas reductions in the ongoing efforts to combat climate change, and the fact that this very issue was debated at length several years ago and the current compromise that exists in the regulations was reached. I would specifically draw attention to the panel, to the 2010 NANOMAT study, which was commissioned by the state for this very reason, and clearly found that these types of large-scale, low-efficiency incinerators were not carbon neutral and could accurately be compared to the emissions of a coal power plant. Given that the Renewable Portfolio Standard, for which the goals are established most recently in the Green Communities Act of 2008, is specifically mandated to support the generation of renewable energy, it's unclear to us why DOER is suddenly interested in rehashing this debate. These proposed revisions would obviously create a scenario in which the Renewable Portfolio Standard would evolve into a sham, selling a bill of goods in terms of the mission to the ratepayers of Massachusetts that it will be set up to fail to deliver. In addition, we would question the process your department has utilized up to this point, including rolling out these proposed revisions within the last several months and failing to schedule a hearing in our city, a designated environmental justice community located in a region with a history of these types of large-scale proposals. It was not until members of the public, the state legislature, and the city council requested such a hearing that your office scheduled one. Because of this short notice, we would formally request that the deadline for written comments be extended to June 30th to allow adequate time for members of the public and our constituents to comment on the proposal. Finally, while DOER may be under no statutory obligation to consider the public health of our constituents, we in fact are. Our city and region continue to be subjected to some of the worst air quality in the country, consistently earning failing grades from the American Lung Association, and most recently being named for the second year in a row the most challenging region to live with asthma in the United States of America. And I'll wrap up my comments shortly. This is the result of a combination of factors, including our geographic location in the valley, historic inequities in access to healthcare, and our subjection to additional pollution-producing industries and actions that target urban communities. Because of our region's geographic location and the history of multiple large-scale biomass proposals in the area, it is not unreasonable for us to assume that the granting of ratepayer subsidies could spur a wide-scale resurgence of such projects across the region, which would undoubtedly have a deleterious impact on the public health of our community and add to the emissions generated in our area. This is coming at a time when our city and region have worked hard to make strides in improving air quality, including developing and implementing our Climate Action and Resilience Plan. And that is why we will also be submitting a letter to the state legislature detailing our individual support for legislation to remove biomass entirely from the statute establishing the RPS. In conclusion, my friends, common sense, historical evidence, and the law would dictate that clean, renewable energy does not come out of a smokestack. It is preposterous to assert otherwise, and it is an affront to our constituents and the ratepayers of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts for tens of millions of their tax dollars to be utilized for the subsidization of an industry that statewide would lead to more, not less, pollution. Thank you very much, and welcome to the City of Springfield.
Gentlemen, my name is Melvin Edwards. I am a city councilor here in the city of Springfield, chairman of General Government Committee, and I talk to you personally. I stand before you as somebody who has been told by his doctor that at some point in my life I'm going to have a double lung transplant. So this is personal for me. There is no way that I can stand in support of anything that is spewing into our air. The first day that this plant runs will be the first day and the only day that it will run its cleanest. Regardless of the standards, and as we change from technology and as the standards change, it will never be a benefit to my community except for the few jobs that it will create. And allow me to suggest to you that the majority of the jobs that in fact will be created because of this plant or any other type of plant of this nature will be at the respiratory department of Bay State Medical Center. Further, I'm really concerned, and I would hope that you would have an appreciation for the fact that as a city councilor in the city of Springfield, when we grant special permits, at the end of the hearing when we grant our permits, whether we approve them or we deny them, there's certain language that we read into the record. And one of the things when we approve the permits is that the permit and the granting of it will not have a negative impact on our community. We ask that you do not make these standards lower or make it more easier or use taxpayer dollars to supplement a private project in the city of Springfield because it will have a negative impact on the health of my community. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Laura Britton. I am the legislative aide for Representative Lindsay Sabadosa, who represents the 1st Hampshire District. Lindsay was hopeful she could be here tonight, but she could not make it, so she wanted me to read testimony that she provided. I'm here to speak in opposition to any rollbacks and rules from the Department of Energy Resources that would allow biomass plants to obtain renewable energy subsidies in Massachusetts. There could not be a more essential time for the Commonwealth to assume a reliance on truly clean, renewable energy sources for heating and electricity. In the midst of a climate crisis, our state is facing serious repercussions should we fail to adopt renewable energy generation. However, it is essential that we execute this transition well. We must eliminate state incentives for biomass energy production and contribute greatly to ensuring that the state only incentivizes clean, renewable energy sources. Biomass is an energy source that, while currently categorized as renewable, contributes to the emission of greenhouse gases and other air pollutants, deforestation in our state, and health problems, as well as takes a substantial amount of time to show positive emission impacts. According to data from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, Massachusetts emits more pollution from wood-burning heating systems than any other state in the Northeast. Additionally, wood-burning boilers contribute to greater CO2 emissions than those that use fossil fuels. Particulate matter is another specific concern that comes from wood-burning biofuel. The Doctors and Scientists Against Wood Smoke Pollution report that particulate matter has been linked to serious health risks, such as asthma, heart and lung disease, and bronchitis. The health impacts alone should be enough to reconsider incentivizing wood-burning heating and energy sources. However, the negative impacts of biomass energy production go further, with their effects on our forests, ecosystems, and climate. Categorizing biomass as renewable assumes that the trees cut down for fuel will grow back quickly enough to counter the carbon being emitted by burning the wood. While it is true that Massachusetts forests sequester a great amount of carbon from our atmosphere already, it is essential to continue that trend by decreasing the number of trees being cut down. Subsidizing wood-burning biofuel heating systems will undoubtedly increase the already large number in the state and further the demand for wood from our forests. This is something we cannot afford to do. We must strive for clean, renewable energy in Massachusetts by removing biomass from the Alternative Portfolio Standard list of renewables, in addition to passing H 853, an act to assure the attainment of greenhouse gas emission goals in the Alternative Portfolio Standard filed by Rep. Denise Provost this session. Massachusetts must promote renewable energy that is essential to aiding the fight against global warming. Through putting an end to the promotion of biomass, Massachusetts has a chance to contribute to a healthier and greener future. I urge the Department of Energy Resources not to roll back regulations and the renewable portfolio standards. Thank you.
All right, we're going to start reading through the list of people that signed up. We have almost 60 people or so that signed up, so we do want to move through these relatively quickly. So I ask you to please keep your comments brief. So we have two microphones. I'd say you just come up to whichever one is closest. I'm going to read who's coming up next, and then whoever is on deck. So first we have Lori Friedman, followed by John Clark.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to comment on the proposed amendment 225 CMR 14. My name is Laurie Freeman. My husband and I are the owners of Solventera Western Avenue, LLC, a small Massachusetts solar business headquartered on the South Shore. We own a single 200 kilowatt rooftop project in Lowell, Mass, and sell the energy to the artists at Western Avenue Studios. We are here today to strongly oppose the amendments to the SREC 1 regulations, which seek to shorten the time period that qualified solar projects such as ours are eligible to generate SRECs. If adopted, this proposed amendment would materially change the financial incentives that had formed the basis of the solar energy agreements entered a decade ago, us among over 10,000 others. And this would have a devastating effect on individual small businesses like ours. It will also send a troubling signal to investors and lenders that solar projects in Massachusetts are subject to substantial regulatory risks, and that Massachusetts may degrade the incentive regime mid-program, leaving solar investors and owners holding the bag. We strongly urge the DOER not to adopt this rule change that would abruptly reverse DOER, longstanding policy relied on by thousands of citizens and businesses, to cause economic hardship and unfairly deprive the early solar adopters, such as us, the benefits of the bargain struck in reliance on that policy, and three, undermine confidence in the Massachusetts solar market. I want to give you a better sense of how this impact would, I'll just give you an example of how this will impact, this major change will impact us. Let me share with you some specifics about our project. When we built our system in 2011, solar power was almost three times as expensive as it is today. Every year, we sell our SRECs to help the utilities meet their requirements under the renewable portfolio standard, and these revenues provide roughly two-thirds of our project revenues and enable us to offer that energy and provide energy savings to the tenants at Western Avenue. If we were to lose the SREC revenues and seek to collect the lost revenues from our customers, we would have to double their rates. But we can't. We made a deal with them. We agreed to sell them energy at a fair price and provide some energy savings. We didn't provide in our agreement that we could raise their rates whenever we felt like it. Even if we had the ability or legal right, we wouldn't treat them like that. But that is what the Commonwealth is proposing to do to us here. The DOER stated that this regulatory change would save ratepayers $150 million. But first of all, we and all of these solar adopters are also ratepayers. And every dollar they're, quote, saving is coming directly out of our pockets. And thousands of others affected who put solar on their roof or started small businesses like we did. By our estimate, this material change in regulations could result in a loss of more than $140,000 in SRECs just for us, our small business, over the lost 2 years of eligibility. While that may not seem like a lot to a large corporation, it's a pretty big hit to a small business like ours. It's college tuition for at least one kid. DOER has worked hard to bring green jobs to the Commonwealth and create market conditions to attract, and has been very successful in attracting capital for healthy future growth of the industry. Please don't stop. Thank you so much.
Next we have John Clark, followed by Mark Calloway.
My name is John Clark, and I'm a licensed practicing forester educated at the University of Massachusetts with dual majors in forestry and natural resource conservation. I'd like to thank the DOER for preparing these regulatory changes and for accepting public comment. I'd also like to commend the Baker-Polito administration for taking up the issue of reducing carbon emissions to mitigate climate change. Within the Commonwealth, our carbon emissions are contributing to the greenhouse effect, warming our global climate, in light of the federal administration weakening its environmental agencies, it has become increasingly important for carbon reduction to occur at the state level. I practice sustainable forestry in my daily business and know that there's opportunity for sustainably derived wood chips to provide local renewable fuels for thermal, electric, and cogeneration facilities. These fuels are renewable and will directly replace fossil fuels, leaving ancient carbon in the ground and utilizing biogenic carbon for our energy needs. As a forestry professional with decades of experience within the Commonwealth, I can appreciate that the proposed regulatory changes will be met with considerable resistance from many who would wish our energy to be found elsewhere. While I differ from many of these individuals in my assessment of natural resources, I genuinely appreciate their commitment to environmental stewardship and best practices. To that end, I see the proposed changes to 225 CMR 14 as making perfect sense. Every day within the Commonwealth, our need to mitigate arboricultural hazards creates enormous quantities of wood chips, most of which is either trucked out of state or allowed to decompose in place. From the moment these trees were identified as growing in the wrong place, their bound carbon and its release was imminent. Decomposition and combustion release exactly the same amount of carbon. This wood waste and its carbon is the byproduct of our desired social activity. The designation of these trees for removal was not determined by a logger or a land clearer, but by a local parks manager, habitat manager, public works planner, campus planner, or solar developer. I see the proposed regulation as recognizing these facts while allowing the resulting materials to be more locally and more responsibly utilized. While I support the majority of the proposed RPS changes, I'm however confused to see that the proposed regulations no longer list land clearing material as an eligible feedstock. While this omission may be in deference to some who may believe its inclusion would promote the removal of forests, they could not be more wrong. While I support the notion that land clearing is the greatest threat to the Commonwealth's forest, this material, like that originating from the urban forest or utility projects, is preordained through the planned creation of our housing developments, college campuses, ball fields, solar farms, and so on. I therefore humbly propose that the DOER return land clearing derived clean wood to the list of eligible material with the provision that the clearing was first permitted. I'm asking both DOER and the Baker-Polito administration to please take the responsible step of promulgating the regulatory changes while allowing chips generated through permitted land clearing activities to remain eligible within 225 CMR 14. Thank you.
Following Mark, we have Charlie Bagnall.
Good evening. My name is Mark Calvary. I'm the president of Calvary Incorporated, Biomass Heat and Power Solutions. Sorry. So my company imports biomass equipment and emission control equipment from primarily Austria and Germany. In general, we like to express our support for the proposed changes to 225 CMR 14, Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard Class 1, and 225 CMR 15, Renewable Energy Portfolio Standard Class 2. However, we would like to propose some subtle adjustments. First, consider adding forest-derived materials from fire mitigation and wildlife management, both land management activities. Second, consider adding land clearing-derived materials for state or municipal projects. And third, consider increasing the minimum required efficiency level to 25% for biomass electric generating facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. So we have Charlie Bagnall and then Jake DuBrow.
Hello, my name is Charlie Bagnall. I work for a company called Peterson Pacific Corporation. We're a subsidiary of Aztec Industries. We're based in Eugene, Oregon. We're a small company. We employ about 250 people. I'm here tonight to testify in favor of changes to the RPS regulations to accommodate non-forest-derived fuels. With Peterson, we are a manufacturer of industrial-sized wood grinders, chippers, and forestry-related equipment. We do employ the latest technology to produce the lowest emissions available on our machines. In fact, Tier 4 emissions, which is diesel engine emissions, came into effect here in Massachusetts in 2018 on our larger machines. We had been already doing that since 2012, so we tried to be as green as possible at our factory and with all of the equipment we bring out. We work very closely with all of our supply partners to ensure this. We go through rigorous audits on our engines to make sure they're compliant. We even test noise levels on the machine to make sure that they're not interfering with people nearby with noise levels. Now, we've always encouraged the best practices in both site prep, storm cleanup, and permitted land use changes. We promote the responsible use of the fiber from these type of operations. Peterson's built our success on taking waste material, processing it, and turning it into a product of some value. Recycling and reducing landfill waste is a big part of what we do. It's also a large part of what our customers do. I've observed that approximately 75 to 85% of the equipment that we manufacture is utilized in non-logging practices, non-logging-based practices. However, the wood-based materials our customers process can end up being sent to landfills, it can be sent to green waste dumps, and some ends up in landscape centers. These materials are non-forest-derived fuel that, unfortunately, are not being used to their fullest potential. To ensure the complete utilization of these materials, we really support the changes to the RPS regulations to accommodate the non-forest-derived fuels. We feel that is a win for the environment. We feel that is a win for the local economy. And finally, we feel it's a big win for Massachusetts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. So following Jake, we have Tanisha Arena.
Hi, how are you? My name is Jake Dubriel. I'm representing Barry Equipment Company out of Webster, Massachusetts, and I'm in favor of the RPS changes. As 1 million tons of non-forest-derived fuel sources are produced annually, 1 million in Massachusetts alone, as supported by a study from UMass in 2002, we support the non-forest-derived RPS. 85% of the support equipment that Barry Equipment supplies the industry is for permitted land use, as well as fire mitigation and habitat creation. With the RPS proposed changes, responsible solutions for non-forest-derived sources can be monitored by our state regulatory commissions and committees, ultimately displacing use of fossil fuels. Thank you.
Thank you. And so following Tanisha, we have Mike Cangone.
Hi, my name is Tanisha Arena, and I am the executive director of Arise for Social Justice. I do not support these changes of this plant being in Springfield. The other morning, I got an email from Seth Godin, who writes about the nonprofit sector. On this morning, his blog post was on time, and it relates so well to this biomass conversation. The title of the post, "The Timing of Side Effects," he writes, "Loosen the constraints on a system, and the system will almost always do better in the short run. That is, if we define better as the visible outputs of what the system does, and short run as the stuff that happens before we have to live with the side effects. So if you remove environmental regulation from a factory, it will probably make more stuff faster for a while. But then the river is sludge and the workers are dead, so in the long run, not so much." My thoughts. So if you betray Springfield with a biomass plant, Palmer Renewable Energy gets $10 to $12 million a year in renewable energy subsidies, but we, the residents of Springfield, receive what? Will you compensate us for the nasty air we will breathe? Biomass isn't clean energy. Burning anything isn't clean energy. Biomass plants emit more CO2 than other energy sources. So while y'all get money, Springfield gets higher rates of asthma, worse air quality than we already have, and a laundry list of other problems that come with the increased pollution. Would you want to breathe this air? When you leave here, you go back to Boston. I live here. My kids live here. My friends live here. We live here. We breathe what they burn, not you. Let me ask you, would you move your family to a city where there was a biomass plant, an already failing air quality grade, and high rates of asthma? And why isn't a solid no seen as a complete sentence, an answer for the plant to exist where we live? Why do we need news crews and social media blitzes to make you realize the value of our lives and our community? Why aren't you suggesting a biomass plant in Longmeadow or East Longmeadow or Agawam or Chickpea? Why is their no stronger than mine, my community? Don't insult anyone's intelligence in telling us that biomass is clean energy. Right. We live in a time where pseudoscience focused on dollars and cents has taken the place of actual science and good sense. And we now question and argue facts. Burning wood may elicit nostalgia and simpler times in our minds, but it wreaks havoc on the environment. Wood smoke is a sign of incomplete combustion. In that smoke, there's natural substances that are toxic to the environment and living creatures, not to mention the particulate that forms and stays in the air and gets breathed into the lungs and absorbed into the bloodstream. A biomass plant in Springfield or anywhere is systemic genocide, and to continue to push and force its placement in a community of black and brown people is blatant environmental racism. Again, why doesn't our no matter as it pertains to our lives and the air that we breathe? Back to Seth Godin. All side effects are more simply called effects. And getting clear about the time frame we live in is the first step to leaving things better than we found them. My thoughts. Doing right by Springfield and making improvements means keeping these regulations and shutting down this biomass conversation for good. We are in a climate crisis that is undeniable, and biomass makes it worse. You can't eat money or drink oil, and we all need to breathe. No biomass in Springfield. No means no.
So next we have Mike Cangone, followed by Charles Thompson. Cangone? Yes. I'm sorry if I mispronounce people's names.
Happens all the time. My name is Michael Langone. I'm here tonight representing the Pioneer Valley Building Trades Council. I represent well over 7,000 members here in the Pioneer Valley, and I am also a Springfield resident. I live about 5 or 10 minutes from the proposed power plant. I'm speaking today to express my support and the support of my union brothers and sisters for the proposed amendments to 225 CMR 14 and 225 CMR 15. Allowing biomass plants that use waste wood to qualify for REC credits is not just good science, it's common sense. Anyone who has driven down the Mass Turnpike in the last few months has seen the tons of wood chips on the ground where the tree trimming recently took place. This wood sits there because it has no current use and is not allowed in landfills in Mass. Using these wood chips to fuel a biomass plant like the one proposed in Springfield would have significant greenhouse gas compared to allowing this gas wood to decompose like we are now. Opponents frequently and intentionally misrepresent that these facilities are using fresh-cut wood or try to use the slippery slope argument that a biomass plant will eventually run out of tree trimmings and be forced to use forest wood. It's just not true. Massachusetts has over 4,000 tons a day of waste wood that otherwise is rotting into the ground and emitting CO2. The Federal Energy Regulation Commission just recently ruled that main utility lines double the size of the safety corridors from 50 feet to 100 feet. This will double the supply of this tree trimming waste wood. The Palmer Renewable Energy Plant will only use 1,200 tons a day. This plant will provide a key source of reliable, renewable baseload power that we need as coal and nuclear plants are taken offline in Massachusetts. This is not something that wind and solar can provide here in the Commonwealth. They're exactly the type of green facilities we should be building. Our members support these changes and would be proud to build these plants anywhere in the Commonwealth. My members are all local people. They live here. They work here. They raise their families here in the Pioneer Valley, in Springfield. I wouldn't be testifying here today as a Springfield resident if I wasn't confident in the science behind the Springfield project and the safety and health of this project for me and my local members. The Springfield Biomass Project is critically important for the Western Massachusetts building trades, especially now that the MGM Springfield project is complete. We view renewable energy projects like this one as the key to the future of the building trades across the Commonwealth. This is a $150 million project that will employ well over 200 union tradesmen to build it, including Teamsters, HVAC mechanics, pipe fitters, carpenters, sheet metal workers, electricians, steel erectors, concrete workers, plumbers, welders, mechanics, industrial maintenance people, and security. It will also employ 50 full-time workers when it's complete. If these amendments aren't adopted and PRE decided not to move forward after over a decade of court cases and regulatory uncertainty, it would send a terrible message to the other businesses and individuals who are considering investing money in infrastructure in this community. Our members are proud to support this biomass and other green and renewable energy projects like the one in Springfield, and we urge you to adopt these proposed amendments. Again, Michael Langoni, I live here, I raised my kids here, I'm going to stay here when this plant is built. It's going to be safe. It's going to be good for the community. I'm not going anywhere. Thank you.
So, next we have Charles Thompson, followed by Vern MacArthur.
Thank you. My name's Charles Thompson. I'm a resident of Hampshire County, a forester by profession. I endorse the small steps proposed to simplify and make consistent some of the administrative aspects of the RPS and APS programs. As a general matter, we should strive to use certain types of wood locally to the extent possible, and incentivizing its use is a common sense thing to do. Hundreds of thousands of tons of wood fiber are generated across the Commonwealth every year by tree crews, arborists, utilities, landscapers, and storm cleanup crews. This is wood that is down or coming down. At present, much of the wood sits and rots, gets dumped somewhere, or is actually trucked away at great expense to us all. Indications are that the amount of wood in this category will increase in the future, whether from storm severity and frequency, loss from insects and diseases, or utility operations to protect transmission lines. I take issue with the proposal to eliminate land clearing wood from eligibility in the proposed provisions. No one is clearing land just to receive a renewable energy credit. The economics make no sense. This is really wood that's coming down anyway. Even when the land use is being changed, the safety margin for the excess of carbon uptake over decay and release across the Commonwealth is enormous. In the case of wood from forests, I support the qualification of forest salvage under the revised efficiency requirements. However, there is other forest-derived wood that should qualify as well under a revised framework. The proposal to include eligibility for material generated as part of verifiable habitat management and restoration activities is sensible, but should be both expanded in scope and be made exempt from the efficiency requirement. The definition of qualifying material should be broadened to include that coming from habitat management activities explicitly called for in the State Wildlife Action Plan, as well as those habitat-based practices eligible for cost-sharing under the USDA NRCS Index of Practice Standards and the Mass Field Office Technical Guide. And as just an aside, an additional comment, I would be delighted to meet with anybody from any organization and discuss the health aspects of modern biomass energy, because I think there's a lot of misinformation out there, and so the offer's out there. Thank you.
Thank you. Following Vern MacArthur, we have Paula Nowick.
Good evening. My name is Vern MacArthur. I live here in Springfield, and I'm here on behalf of the Springfield Climate Justice Coalition. Last night, I watched a documentary on Volkswagen and their decades-long attempt to disguise and delude the public about the polluting effects of their diesel engine car, selling through misleading advertising, putting defeat devices in the car, and manipulating software and stonewalling regulatory agencies. And those diesels put a lot of nitrous oxide into the air, which is much worse than carbon dioxide. Now, I have no idea whether a biomass plant puts nitrous oxygen in the air, But the question in the documentary was raised, how were they able to do this? Why were they doing this with such devastating impact on public health and on air pollution? And the answer that was given was, well, it was a cost-benefit analysis. It made sense to the bottom line. The problem was, they said, that human welfare was not part of the analysis, which is part of the corporate model. It wasn't just VW that was doing this, it was also other car manufacturers, diesel car manufacturers in Europe. And it's not just car manufacturing, it's for large corporations, the bottom line cost-benefit analysis does not include human welfare. That's what we need you for. You've got to pay attention to that. We are to put something in Springfield that puts anything into the air at a place where asthma is the worst in the country, whether it's a little or a lot, simply does not make any sense. I don't know what you do with the excess wood that's lying around, but burning it and putting the smoke and particulate matter into Springfield does not make sense, and we need panels like you and institutions like you to stand up and pay particular attention to the human needs and the human health and welfare. Thank you very much.
Following Paula Nowick, we have Sylvia Staub.
Good evening. My name is Paula Nowick, and I'm a resident of Springfield. I live 2 or 3 miles from the proposed plant. I am one of the 20% of Springfield residents who has asthma, and I have to treat that. It costs me a lot in energy, and I carry around an inhalator that I have been advised I need to carry all the time because I could have a sudden attack and die. That's my concern. I'm listening to the reports from the American Lung Association that there are particulates in the air that are easily absorbed by my lungs, and 20% of the Springfield or anybody. So I'd like to just say, I'd like to tell you a little story I just made up about a plant that's proposed, and it's very efficient, and it employs a lot of people. And it's of great benefit to the community because for $1 a year, you could get all the electricity you wanted. But there was one little problem. It created kind of a mist, and that mist, they had to admit, would start to cause glaucoma and blindness in the eyes of 20% of that community. So despite the profitability, despite the employment, would it be, in your judgment, right to put a plant that would cause blindness for 20% of its residents? Asthma is invisible. But that's my story. That's my question.
Following Sylvia, we have Henry Nowick.
One of these before. Can you hear me? Okay. As a resident of Springfield and the grandmother of 3 children who are growing up in Springfield, I'd like to say a few words about the astonishing and troubling proposal by the Massachusetts Office of Energy Resources to reduce restrictions on the burning of biomass in Massachusetts. The 2012 Massachusetts RPS, Renewable Portfolio Standard Biomass Rules, were based on a scientific study of bioenergy carbon impact, the so-called Manomet study, which was the first in the nation to recognize that burning trees for energy increases greenhouse gas emissions. Biomass plants also belch soot, smog, and other pollutants that threaten public health and the environment. Considering that Springfield has been named the asthma capital of the U.S. by the Asthma and Allergy Foundation of America, based on asthma prevalence, emergency room visits, and asthma-related deaths, it is very troubling to realize that this proposal by the Department of Energy Resources would enable a 35-megawatt biomass plant to be constructed in East Springfield in the center of a residential neighborhood. In addition, scientific studies have shown that biomass power plants release more carbon dioxide per unit of energy than coal-fired power plants. And last but very significantly, the Paris Climate Change Agreement, which Governor Baker pledged to support, calls for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and protecting forests as natural carbon sinks. This proposal would increase logging and the depletion of necessary forests to absorb carbon dioxide. It is not only my own grandchildren about whose future well-being I am concerned, but all the children of this community and of all the other communities around the state of Massachusetts, which will be affected by the many negative implications that this move would bring. Thank you.
So following Henry Nowak, we have Thomas Chamberlain.
My name is Hank Nowak. I'm a chemical engineer and a certified toxic use reduction planner from the Department of Environmental Protection. My concern about the overall pollution obviously has been addressed by other people and is pretty commonly discussed in newspapers, magazines, and whatever. And the fact that you get more carbon dioxide from wood burning than you would from other fuels is hard to believe, but that's the fact we have. My concern primarily is I was surprised to find that the DEP had approved as a fuel source the wood that was coming from cleaning, preserving trees, treating them with whatever case might be. But in most cases, if you want to preserve a tree or a plant life, you rely on something that contains a chlorinated solvent or chlorinated material, which is much, much harder to destroy and combust than the wood material fuel. In fact, in the severe case, the actual temperature for destroying chlorinated solvents is considered to be elevated above the normal temperature, and the residence time is also extended to make sure that you've done a better job of cleaning it up, because it's a more difficult job to destroy chlorinated solvent. Now the question is, what is being done to control the possibility of wood waste that has already been treated with solvents in the hopes of preserving it, but only to find that it failed and now has to be destroyed? What mechanism is in place to prevent someone from taking this wood that's highly chlorinated solvent and putting it in as feed for a waste burner or incinerator? Anyone have that answer?
So just apologize, but we're not here to answer questions right now. Just
okay. Then it remains a question. Thank you.
So following Thomas Chamberlain, we have Grace Walter.
Good evening. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. My name is Thomas Chamberlain. I am the tree warden for the town of Sturbridge, and I have served my community for over 35 years in that position. I'm proud to state that Sturbridge is one of a number of Massachusetts communities that has been recognized for over 30 years as being a Tree City USA. We have also been recognized by your sister agency in DCR, Urban and Community Forestry Section, as a sustainable urban forest community. I am an ISA certified arborist, qualified in tree risk assessment, the past president of the Massachusetts Tree Wardens and Foresters Association, the oldest tree protection organization in the United States, and also served at the request of the United States Forest Service on their National Advisory Committee for their Urban Forest Strike Team program. This program is to train community arborists to effectively deal with natural disasters, both in maximizing their FEMA assistance, but also to preserve and restore their community forests following presidential declared national disasters. This strike team responded to the city of Springfield following the tornado of June 1st, 2011. My career has been in tree protection and preservation, but I am here tonight to voice my support for the regulatory changes as proposed under the Renewable Energy Portfolio Standards, both Class 1 and Class 2. In this current fiscal year, which ends the end of this month, the town of Sturbridge will have expended over $300,000 in tree removal and woody debris disposal costs on some 700 plus public street trees that have died from the recent 5-year combination of drought and gypsy moth infestation. In partnership with our utility in Sturbridge, National Grid, they also removed an additional 250 dead public street trees adjacent to their utility system. We currently have a stockpile of over 4,500 cubic yards of wood chips that we have no place to dispose of. There is no market, nowhere short of trucking it to Ohio to get rid of it. This is becoming a community problem for every city and town. In the Central Mass area, one just has to drive through the communities and see all of the dead trees. We as communities, as taxpayers, need this type of regulatory relief and the changes that are being proposed in the RPS Class 1 and Class 2. I'd also like to ask for your consideration in allowing municipal site changes, as been referred to by other speakers as land clearing, but it's obviously site use change, for such purposes as schools, like this facility here, ball fields, and municipal buildings, for that wood to be eligible as wood waste. Thank you for proposing these changes. I strongly urge their adoption.
And so, following Grace Walter, we have Paul Martin. Is Grace here?
I'm Paul Martin. As already noted, the Manomet study showed that there is an excess of CO2 emissions that from burning wood biomass, woody biomass, as compared with fossil fuels. That excess can eventually be recaptured, but the problem is a significant time lag in that process. It does not take very long for an industrial furnace to consume a tree, but it takes 20 to 40 years to grow an equivalent tree. The Manomet study showed that when this time lag was carefully calculated, it revealed that it would take around 100 years of continuous operation before a woody biomass generator was less carbon intensive than a natural gas generator. 100 years. And yet, the current science analysis of the IPCC 1.5 report says that we have approximately 11 years to reduce carbon emissions, and we must get to net zero by 2050. A mere 31 years from now. in order to avoid even more disastrous climate events than we have already experienced. It is unconscionable that the DOER is at this time considering changes in rules that would promote the use of ratepayer funds to incentivize a process that adds even more carbon to the atmosphere than fossil fuel generators. This is wrong. This rule change should be rejected.
Next we have Penny Geis, followed by Bob Armstrong.
I'm Penny Geis. While I once lived in Springfield, I now live in Northampton. I've been thinking about this issue since I was privileged to help write a small part of the restructuring law. I used to be a licensed electricity supplier and bought and sold electricity raw naked off the grid. So I've been thinking about renewable portfolio standards for a long time. And I was astonished to see that we are considering making it more profitable to cut down our most effective carbon sinks and to burn and release that carbon into the air. Today, I am a grandmother, and I wonder if any of you have children or grandchildren who might still be alive 30 years from now. I urge you to think about that day and to make a decision about which you will have no regrets in 30 years. Thank you.
So following Bob, we have Polly Ryan.
Hi, my name is Bob Armstrong, and I'm a selectman in Conway, and I oppose making the changes. Our New England grid is managed by an organization called ISO New England, and they do it well. And they manage it mostly on the principle that generators have to compete with each other to pump electricity into the grid. If your electricity is too expensive, you don't get to sell electricity into the grid. And it works really well. Here in Massachusetts, we've virtually eliminated coal. And not because we like or don't like coal, or not because it's dirty, even though it is. It's just too expensive. We've virtually eliminated oil here in Massachusetts because it's just too expensive. And without subsidies, wood is just too expensive. That's the way ISO New England runs the grid. The RPS did contain a provision to allow clean wood-burning plants to exist and to burn wood and to receive subsidies that allows them to compete. Without those subsidies, they can't compete. Palmer chose not to build their plant because it was too dirty. They wouldn't receive subsidies. They couldn't compete. They couldn't raise financing. So you guys, what you want to do is get rid of those rules that would require Palmer to burn cleanly so that they can get subsidies. And we are opposed to that. Now, I haven't heard a single person in here promote these plants because they think making electricity with wood is a great idea. We have a lot of greedy municipal people. We have foresters who are saying, oh, I can't get rid of my wood chips. And so for the sake of the damn wood chips, we have to allow wood burners to make electricity subsidized by our ratepayers. This is ridiculous. Now, New Hampshire and Maine are at least upfront about it. New Hampshire and Maine subsidize their wood-burning plants. We don't do that here in Massachusetts, unless you guys do. They subsidize their wood-burning plants through state taxes. So my advice is, if you really want to burn wood, get your legislators to pass a bill to raise our taxes to burn wood. Pass your own damn bill. Don't get your hands on the RPS. I believe you could not pass that bill, which is why the DOER is now sliding it under the table. So as soon as your changes get made, Palmer Renewable is going to be building a plant here in Springfield, and they're going to start getting taxes. But worse, my opinion, and I feel bad for Springfield, you should not be ruined like this. Worse, all of those wood-burning plants up in New Hampshire and in Maine will suddenly now qualify for RPS subsidies. So our electric ratepayers are going to be subsidizing all of those wood-burning plants up in New Hampshire and Maine. And what this feels like to me is that a deal has gotten struck between our governor and Paul LePage, saying, we will let you bring your power lines down through Maine if you change your subsidy laws so that you subsidize our Maine power plants. And that's a terrible deal.
So following Polly Ryan, we have Liz Busey.
Hi, my name is Polly Ryan, and I'm from Plainfield, Massachusetts. And in order to convey how using plant biomass as a renewable energy source is a very bad idea, I'm going to attempt a 3-minute lesson on plants and photosynthesis in relation to climate change. Photosynthesis happens to be our planet's most important biological cycle. Barbara Ward, who wrote Only One Earth, The Care and Maintenance of a Small Planet, said this about it. We cannot get around photosynthesis. We cannot say, I am not going to give a damn about phytoplankton. All these tiny mechanisms provide the preconditions of our planetary life. To say we do not care is to say, in the most literal sense, that we choose death. Indeed, all life depends on this cycle, because that is where oxygen comes from. I have a first grade tutorial sheet to share with you on photosynthesis. It says, photosynthesis is the process where plants use light from the sun to convert carbon dioxide from the air and water from the soil into sugar to feed the plant, and oxygen is given out in the air. So how is this cycle and the health of plants affected by climate change, and more specifically, increased temperature? Plants have pores in their leaves where gas, oxygen and carbon dioxide, and water exchange occurs. Yes, just like us, plants kind of sweat. They take water up from the soil, some of which is used in photosynthesis, some of which is used to transport minerals from the soil to plant cells for their metabolism. Any remaining water is then transpired out of the leaf's pores into the atmosphere. So leaf pores are synonymous with our lungs and skin pores. Now when it's hot or there is very little water in the soil, these pores close to conserve water. Transpiration, and photosynthesis stops. And simply put, Without water and the ability to photosynthesize, plants will eventually die. And without plants, all aerobic, including us, organisms will die. Now, the danger in increasing CO2 levels in the atmosphere is that it actually prevents heat from the sun bouncing off the surface of the Earth and escaping back into space. This results in a negative feedback loop where plants and photosynthesis are concerned. So are you getting the picture here? Increased heat leads to less photosynthesis, less crop production, less oxygen, and even more CO2 buildup in the atmosphere. And another consideration is that plants can't migrate. They can't move to a new location to cool themselves or to get water. Another factor scientists have recently determined is that one of the critical enzymes involved in photosynthesis cycle is temperature sensitive and less efficient at higher temperatures. So it makes no sense to me to consider burning trees as a renewable energy source, which in effect does two things: sequesters less carbon from the atmosphere when they get cut down, and puts more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere when they are burned. I've lost my place. This will lead to a tipping point where life will be threatened with extinction. And planting more trees at some point just won't cut it, because they can't grow fast enough to counter this feedback loop. In conclusion, we are damned if we don't do everything we can to control temperature from rising on our planet. When our plants die and there's no food or oxygen, then all other living creatures cease to exist.
So just a reminder, we do have over 40 people still signed up to testify, and we only have the room for another hour and 20 minutes or so. So we really do ask that people please keep their comments brief and try to keep them under 2 minutes if possible.
I'll give it a shot anyway. First question, how many people in here have one of these with them all the time? Come on. How many? It's an inhaler, a ProAir, albuterol, the emergency inhaler. 50% of my children carry this. I have 4 sons. 50% of my grandchildren carry this. I have 10. There's a problem. My name is Liz Busey. I'm from Arise for Social Justice. I'm a housing and economic justice organizer. I'm reading a statement from Michael Ann Busey. She is the founding member of Arise for Social Justice, the retired ex-executive director, an organizer, an activist, and a really pissed off sister. Greetings, this is Michael Ann Busey, Arise for Social Justice and the Springfield Climate Justice Coalition, 27 Mystic Street, Springfield. We, the community organizers, members, have received nothing for our work but the satisfaction that we've done our best to protect our city and our state from air pollution, a decline in public health, and the continuing climate crisis. While you, DOER, and members of the current Baker administration have been meeting with biomass industry leaders who will receive nothing but financial gain from the regulation changes that you are proposing. I don't understand the degree to which you've been able to convince yourselves that burning anything for fuel, especially our forests, will not continue to damage our environment and decrease the possibility that we can prevent climate catastrophe. That's the charitable interpretation of your proposals. Massachusetts has been losing about 7,000 acres of forest land a year to development, and to land conservation rates are falling. This was found by a Harvard report. Yet more carbon sequestration is possible. The Nature Conservatory estimates that the natural climate solutions, like restoring degraded soils, safeguarding wetlands, and planting new forests, could account for almost 40% of the carbon savings needed to keep the world on the 2 degrees Celsius path generally seen as necessary to keep climate chaos at survivable levels. Every dollar the Commonwealth invests in technologies such as biomass is $1 less that can be spent developing truly renewable energy. We have no time for experimentation. We cannot burn our way to a planet in which we can continue to live and thrive. Reject the profit motives of the biomass industry and, for once, be on the side of the people and the planet. Thank you.
So next up we have Jim Thornley, followed by Ernesto Cruz.
My name is Jim Thornley. I'm from the Wendell State Forest Alliance. I would just like to say that here we are in this moment. We know that in 30 years, we're going to have to still breathe this air. The Wendell State Forest Alliance is promoting HB 897 to stop taking any wood out of people's of Massachusetts forests, particularly to burn in a biomass form, which will harm Springfield and the rest of the planet. And therefore, I would say, if you have children, they will be here in 30 years, and they're going to breathe the air that's coming out of this plant. So please, don't let this go forward. Thank you.
Following Ernesto, we have Marty Nathan.
Hi, good evening. My name is Ernesto Cruz. I'm from Springfield, and I am a member of Co-op Power, a network of local energy cooperatives incorporated as a consumer-owned energy cooperative in Massachusetts. Co-op Power is owned and democratically controlled by its consumer members committed to multi-class and multi-racial inclusion and ownership. Co-op Power members work locally through their local energy cooperative to bring energy efficiency and renewable energy resources to their communities. I'm here today not to discuss the technical aspects of the RPS rule change, but to look towards a future that we can all benefit from and envision. The reason why everyone is here today is because of their concerns about what will happen if the Palmer Renewable Energy Project on Page Boulevard in Springfield is allowed to proceed. The concerns of our community are well placed, as Springfield is the asthma capital of Massachusetts, and with more stringent regulations in cities like Los Angeles and New York, has become the national leader. We understand that PRE and its holding company, Palmer Paving Corporation, have been known in the region for over 60 years as a socially responsible neighbor and leaders in staying ahead of environmental regulations. Further, they have been employing members of our community with good paying jobs and that benefit greater society by keeping our infrastructure moving. People drive over and interact with their work every day and never give a second thought as to the way we are all connected constantly. Fortunately, they had the foresight to name the project Palmer Renewable Energy and not incinerator or wood burning. It is not PRE's fault that scientists are saying that the climate crisis we face is more serious than was previously known. It is not their burden alone that projects across the nation that took complicated planning and coordination are now opposed at every turn by citizens concerned about our planet. It is not the planning of PRE that crossed two highways, placed industrial zones throughout the city, and a sewage treatment plant across a river. Biomass is, in fact, a better process than other forms of energy generation and heating when it comes to environmental outcomes. PRE's proposal does exceed standards that other forms of energy production can't meet. However, in a city that is home to vulnerable populations with devastating health disparities, any particulate matter in the air could be the difference for a young child or senior citizen's life or health. For these reasons and more, we ask that the DOER and any company supporting changes to the current rules reconsider and shift their resources towards other forms of renewable energy that better mitigate the harmful outcomes of energy generation, particularly in cities where the socioeconomic disparities are as glaring as they are in Springfield. The future holds an opportunity for communities to work hand in hand with industry to find new ways of doing business, empowering the needs of everyone. Our current scenario, where both sides are doubling down and focus on our own perspectives instead of looking for ways to collaborate, won't work. Community members need to have input on projects that impact their lives decades into the future, but they don't have the technical expertise or connection to assist in that process far too often. Good corporate neighbors who have stood by through thick and thin need to know and understand the needs of the communities they serve, but don't always have the mechanisms with which to accomplish serving the greater good. It's time to consider hitting the reset button and assess a way to move forward where everyone has a better than expected outcome. There need not be winners and losers, but there needs to be progress. We can work together to find new ways to bring community input to the forefront where expertise and knowledge can accomplish what was not thought to be possible. Our Commonwealth, country, and planet are going through environmental and social changes that challenge us to find the best within ourselves to combine our strengths and make the environment and economy work for everyone. What looks like gridlock today will look like an opportunity that was overcome tomorrow if we could take a look at these circumstances with a fresh set of eyes. Thank you.
And following Marty, we have Reverend Margaret Bullitt Jonas.
Thank you very much. My name is Dr. Marty Nathan, and I am a physician at Bay State Brightwood Health Center. It's very hard to read because the light is low. But I wish to submit this testimony in opposition to the proposed changes by the Department of Energy Resources to the Renewable Portfolio Standard regarding loosening standards for biomass and waste incineration to produce electricity. I work at Bay State Brightwood Health Center, located in the north end of Springfield, the epicenter for the asthma epidemic plaguing Massachusetts. Springfield is the most challenging city in the country to live with asthma. I am a family physician who treats mainly low-income, mainly Latino, elderly, working adults, and children, those most susceptible to the disease and to the morbidity and its mortality. On any one day, I am likely to see and treat a toddler or a frail older person who comes in wheezing and in respiratory distress. If necessary, I send them to the hospital emergency room for stabilization or admission. They and their families are usually frightened and exhausted from nights without sleep, from coughing and shortness of breath. The asthma rubber hits the road at Brightwood. I also treat migrants from Puerto Rico to Western Massachusetts, spurred to leave their homes because of climate change-induced Hurricane Maria, from which the island has still not recovered. We in the North End have scrambled to provide these climate refugees the support they need to survive, most of them having lost everything to the winds and the flooding of climate change. Unfortunately, combustion of biomass and garbage contribute mightily to both of these problems, both respiratory illness inducing air pollution and the greenhouse gases that cause climate change and its massive hurricanes. The new DOER regulations would subsidize inefficient wood burning electric generating plants like the Palmer plant, making them viable when otherwise they are not. They would promote the burning of trees and garbage despite the fact that both produce more particulate matter, nitrogen dioxide and CO2, than the oil and gas that they are replacing. Meaning that my patients will be breathing more of the substances that make them sick than ever, and facing a worse future of climate change than if we kept on burning fossil fuels. The irony is that they and all of us are paying for this. The funds for the renewable subsidies come from our energy bill and theirs. They who are disabled, underpaid, and often desperately poor. This is a terrible plan, sacrificing my patients' health and all of our climate future to subsidize the biomass industry. It is a violation of the public health, and the DOER and Baker administration should be ashamed of their intentions. Changes regarding biomass and waste incineration should be withdrawn.
And following Reverend Bulogenis, we have Michelle Morantz.
Good evening. My name is Reverend Dr. Margaret Bulogenis. I'm an Episcopal priest with an ecumenical job. I serve as missioner for creation care for the 375 churches of the Massachusetts Conference of the United Church of Christ, and also for the Episcopal Diocese of Western Massachusetts, which stretches from Worcester to the border of New York, and whose diocesan headquarters are located right here in Springfield. I'm here to speak against Governor Baker's proposed new standards that consider biomass a form of renewable energy. I am here to stand with trees. Forests are sacred spaces, not spaces to make a fortune. Trees matter. They sequester carbon, and the latest IPCC report makes it abundantly clear that in order to avert climate chaos, we must protect and enlarge our forests, not cut them down. It is absurd to claim that burning intact trees is carbon neutral because new trees will grow back someday. The truth is that logging releases an immediate pulse of carbon into the atmosphere that will take years for young trees to absorb. And there's no way to refreeze the polar caps and the glaciers that will have vanished in the meantime. It's also absurd to claim that incinerating trees is a form of clean energy. For inefficient biomass power plants, as we've heard tonight, actually release as much or more CO2 per unit of energy than coal-fired power plants do. If humanity manages to survive on this planet, it will be thanks in part to the forests that we leave intact and to the new forests that we plant. Trees are essential to human health and survival, and trees are essential to the human spirit. Biblical scholars point out that there is a tree on the first page of Genesis and on the last page of the book of Revelation, the first and last pages of the Bible. There is a tree in the first Psalm, and the Bible refers to its wisdom as a tree of life. Jesus calls himself the true vine. Love calls me, and the God of life calls me to stand with trees, to stand with all our brother-sister beings that are so swiftly being destroyed by an economic system that heedlessly devours the web of life that God entrusted to our care. I call upon Governor Baker and his administration to drop plans to count incineration as renewable energy. I call upon Governor Baker and his administration to stop renewable energy subsidies for all biomass and trash incineration in our state. Thanks for listening.
Following the cell, we have Patrick Devlin.
Good evening. My name is Michelle Morantz. I'm a resident of Long Meadow and a retired teacher who taught for years at Springfield Central High School. I'm speaking tonight to urge you to do what you can to prevent a biomass incinerator from being built in Springfield, close to a residential neighborhood, and to the nearly 2,000 students who attend Central High. As a former Springfield teacher who observed all the inhaler use, I was not surprised to learn that Springfield children suffer nearly twice the national rate of asthma. A biomass incinerator whose byproduct will be toxic particulates has no place anywhere, but especially in Springfield, which is known as the asthma capital of the United States. And what happens in Springfield doesn't stay in Springfield, as the rate of respiratory diseases throughout the Pioneer Valley exceeds national norms. An additional health issue is the negative impact of any wood-burning facility, be it power plants, school furnaces, or home stoves. A World Health Organization study concludes that wood fuel energy is in fact carcinogenic due to particulates and toxic gas emissions. And the American Lung Association has also written that though everyone is at risk from particle pollution, the youth, elderly, and those with pre-existing respiratory diseases like asthma and COPD are at even greater risk. In fact, the New York City Health Department cites air particulates as a cause of more than 2,000 premature deaths and 6,000 emergency room visits and hospitalizations each year. This wood-burning incinerator would also contribute to the ongoing threat of climate change by releasing toxic pollutants and carbon dioxide that has skyrocketed this year to its highest point in the last 800,000 years, according to the Boston Globe. At this critical moment in human history, how can the state possibly sanction an industry whose product promotes deforestation and releases more carbon and other greenhouse gases into the air than coal per megawatt hour of energy? Recent studies have shown that the mere act of heavy cutting in forests can lead to carbon losses that can last for decades. Though incinerator advocates may argue that trees are renewable resources, science reveals that it takes decades to grow a mature tree, and that heavy cutting on short rotations produces forests that often don't recover their original carbon storage ability even after a century. Why should taxpayers subsidize deforestation and increased air pollution, particularly since over 70% of Massachusetts residents want their energy to come from clean sources? If the majority of us want truly renewable energy, shouldn't the Department of Energy Resources subsidize our state's burgeoning clean energy industry instead? In closing, I'd like to repeat, there is no ecological, economic, or health benefit that justifies our state subsidizing the wood fuel industry. With the clean energy options now available to consumers, we don't need to support a polluting and health-destroying technology masquerading as a clean energy solution. Thank you.
So, next up, we have Patrick Devlin. Followed by Ed Olmsted.
Good evening. My name is Patrick Devlin. I'm from Greenfield. And I would first like to thank you for the opportunity to speak here tonight. I'll be real brief. I only have a couple of questions. Why are we having this meeting? I thought we dealt with this 10 years ago.
Governor Patrick appointed a Blue Ribbon Commission to do an in-depth study of biomass. That was completed, and they decided that it was a real bad idea for a number of reasons. So my question to you is, what has changed in the scientific community to make this a good idea today? And to try and use taxpayers' money to pay for it, I think is disgusting. Thank you.
Following Ed Olmsted, we have Leslie Sterling and Fred Small.
Hello. I attended the hearing at UMass on May 16th and intend to submit further written testimony to DOER this week. I appreciate your having this hearing and giving us the opportunity from here to hear from all sides of the issue. Having considered what was said at that hearing and also at this hearing about having considered what was said at the hearing in Amherst, I want to add briefly to my previous words. At the May 16th hearing and here tonight, a lot was said about what wood burning as a renewable resource, because forests regrow, etc. I do not believe the reasoning presented supports that conclusion. I didn't believe it after the last meeting, and I don't believe that it's supported by the reasoning we've heard here tonight. I don't believe that any carbon burning should be supported either in the RPS 1 or 2. However, beyond that, the technologies and behaviors we should be incentivizing should not only be renewable, but non-harmful to habitat and people, clean in other words. Even beyond that, I believe that our way through this global biological and climate crisis is to focus beyond harm reduction by moving towards creating, renewing, and enhancing healthy biological ecologies and healthy and resilient human communities. If we had put humans and care for the biological world at the top of our consideration from the beginning of the Industrial Revolution, I don't believe we would find ourselves in this climate crisis. If we put life and humans first now, perhaps we have a chance to turn things around. Biomass incineration falls way short of improving the world, especially when it comes to the incineration facilities. There is nothing renewable about placing a biomass facility and the infrastructure to support it in any community. What we need in those communities, especially in communities such as Springfield, if people have been stressed by other non-life-enhancing factors, are environments that contribute to human health and healthy connections to the larger biological world. We need renewable, rejuvenating, and life-enhancing solutions. Incentives would be much better for biomass would be much better spent on other methods, such as methodologies and technologies for reducing energy use. And I know that's not a popular thing to state, but that is one of the things that we should be promoting, and incentives could be provided for that. Thank you very much.
And so following this is John Nowak.
Mr. Judge, members of the panel, I'm the Reverend Fred Small, Minister for Climate Justice at Arlington Street Church in Boston.
And I am the Reverend Leslie Sterling, Rector of St. Bartholomew's Episcopal Church in Cambridge, a childhood asthma sufferer and a lifelong activist for inclusive justice.
We both serve on the steering committee of the Faith Science Alliance for Climate Leadership, supported by over 600 scientists and faith leaders in Massachusetts.
The Faith Science Alliance opposes biomass incineration on the grounds of science, morality, and environmental justice. We urge rejection of any policy that would facilitate, credit, or subsidize it.
Every religious tradition forbids theft. Climate change is theft from our own children and the most vulnerable people on the planet, most of them poor and of color. Air pollution steals the breath of life from the innocent who are forced to inhale it.
Every religious tradition commands us to care for creation. Climate change and mass exploitation of forests for fuel desecrate creation.
Every religious tradition calls us to care for the weak and helpless among us. Environmental injustice attacks the weak and helpless among us.
As a matter of science, biomass incineration accelerates global warming. It launches more carbon into the atmosphere now when we can least afford it. It doesn't matter whether vegetation might or might not eventually grow to replace it, because by that time, the climate may already be broken.
As a matter of morality and justice, biomass incineration once again burdens the least powerful and most vulnerable of our neighbors with the toxins of inequality and racism. Springfield, we know, is already the asthma capital of the nation. To aggravate its pollution with more incineration is unconscionable.
What will it profit you, Jesus asked, to gain the whole world if you lose your own soul? If we privilege profit over human health, climate science, and God's creation, we lose both the world and our own soul. Instead, let us make the science choice, the moral choice, the justice choice, the compassionate choice. Let us protect our neighbors, be faithful stewards, and say no to biomass.
Thank you.
So next we have John Millick, followed by Tatiana Cheeks.
Is that John Miller?
Miller, sorry, the R.
Good evening, my name is John Miller. I'm a resident of Springfield. And the most recent atmospheric reports say the carbon dioxide levels in the atmosphere are still rising. Burning wood for energy production does not help reduce greenhouse gases. It straight out increases them, because in the real world, burning wood is not carbon neutral. The bottom line is, and it seems so clear, that the atmosphere is filled with carbon dioxide right now. When you emit carbon dioxide right now, it goes into the atmosphere right now. And how is that carbon neutral? Unless you're looking at a bunch of numbers on a spreadsheet in an office somewhere, climate change is happening now. It's not a calculation or a possibility. The other thing is to cut and burn our trees to help reduce CO2 emissions, when our trees are our main natural resource for removing CO2 from the air, seems totally insane. You know, they say it's renewable because they can plant more trees, but the trees take years to grow, so it's not really renewable. So I ask you to please remove wood-burning biomass and trash burning from the renewable heating source subsidies, and to remove woody biomass fuel from the list of eligible renewable electrical source subsidies. We should not be paying companies to pollute our air. Don't pay polluters. We breathe what they burn. Thank you.
And so we have Tatiana Cheeks, followed by Rafael Rodriguez. Okay. So following Rafael, we have, I'm actually not sure what the name is, but the organization listed was 120 Lamont Street.
Can't read the signature.
Yeah.
Good evening. My name is Rafael Rodriguez. I'm a long-term resident of Springfield. I was going to say attorney Rafael Rodriguez, because I am an attorney, but I practice in Connecticut. I moved here about 30 years ago to attend law school just across the street, and I have stayed living in Springfield all along. I live near Forest Park. And one of the things that I was thinking while people were talking here is that there are days in Springfield that is painful to breathe. And literally, you wake up in the morning, you go even to Forest Park, and you can smell the fumes. You can smell the low quality of the air. And in a way, you know, having been an attorney, and prior to that, having been a chemist and practiced science and so forth, I think that, you know, at the end of the day, you can find arguments from one way or the other. But I want you, I urge you, to take into consideration the health of the people here. Yes, you might find someone who can breathe anything, or someone who could, you know, I had an uncle smoke and died at 99. But that's not the rule. For the vast majority of the people, the air that we're breathing here in Springfield is harming us. So I urge you not to approve this, not to have this biomass plant in Springfield. It is a bad idea. And in addition to all the science and all the legal arguments that you can make, there's also a moral part to it. There's something about consciousness that if you are doing something that is going to harm a lot of people, you have to err on the side of those people. The truth of the matter is that many companies in the United States say, oh, but we're going to lose money. Workers will say, well, I'm going to have a job and so forth. But if you approve things like that, if you subsidize these kind of investments and these kind of companies, you are not incentivizing them into moving into more ecological friendly activities. So you can do two things at once. Not approve the bioplant. By that you preserve, at least prevent the air to get worse. And on the other hand, incentivize these investors to do something that benefits the environment. I think they have the capacity, and they would do it if they have this, the right message from the part of the government. So I'm definitely opposed to this thing. And one of the things that I would suggest is that you extend the time for submitting comments, like was requested by one of the councillors from the city of Springfield. Because myself, last Wednesday, I was going to a hearing that suddenly I discovered it wasn't going to happen. And then they say, well, you know, they're trying to hide the hearing so people don't participate. Don't give that message. You know, really open the opportunity for people to submit information and to be able to connect with your consciousness and with your heart. Do the right thing. Thank you.
So next we have Laurel. Sorry, I can't really see the last name. It starts with an F. Yep.
My name is Richard Person. I've lived here all my life. In fact, this, where this school is, used to be O'Shea's dump. That's how long I've lived here. Anyway, no one's mentioned the millions of trucks, diesel, that will be used to haul the wood to the wood-burning store. I think it's very important, along with what everyone else is thinking. It's ridiculous, the wood-burning for electricity.
So next we have Laurel. And then following Laurel is Jeffrey Scanlon. Sorry.
Laurel Facey from Wendell, and I'm reading comments from Lisa Hogue. We are both members of the Wendell State Forest Alliance. I'm going to make it short, cut out a few paragraphs so it will go faster. The alarming proposed changes to RPS Class 1, especially the changes that reduce or eliminate the core requirements of the 2012 RPS bioenergy rules, place us on a compelled course of human extinction, covertly engineered by private commercial interests. This is a direct betrayal of your one and only lawful mandate, which is to serve the greater good of the people of the Commonwealth. Furthermore, this attempt to cast aside science-based rules, which the Massachusetts people agreed to in a prior contract with you, violates that contract and attempts to replace it with a forced solution to which we do not consent. This, therefore, is not a valid contract, as it is knowingly seeking to abort the consent of the living men and women of this Commonwealth. The Baker administration is aware that the climate crisis is real and that the time window for dramatic action is just a few years. These proposals are entirely contrary to the public good, contrary to my health, and especially the health of children and older adults. This, therefore, is a knowingly and willfully malfeasant violation of this governor's sworn oath of office. Clean energy does not come out of a smokestack. Burning wood is a highly emitting source of energy, more polluting than coal, and there is no longer time to grow new forests to recapture the emissions. And moreover, living forests each year sequester 30% of the 9 gigatons of carbon dioxide that humans emit annually. Half of all the carbon sequestered in all the forests in the world is in the 1% of largest diameter trees in every forest. You are attempting to justify this corrupt ecocidal course of action by distorted science statements that have been clearly proven false and are dishonest. We have not yet recovered from the deforestation of all the Massachusetts that occurred in 1850. We realized then that the error of that disastrous mistake and swore never to do anything so stupid again, and yet here you are trying to commit the same disastrous crime all over again. The 1953 USDA study, Soil and Civilization, clearly documents this deforestation which causes desertification, and that every place that has been a major civilization, there is now a desert. The plan, engineered by private interests, is on track to turn our entire planet into a desert. And for what? So you guys can all keep your golden parachutes and retirement funds while your children and grandchildren are subjected to forced extinction by your corrupt hands. Furthermore, health impacts are an immediate consequence of wood burning. Again, you are proposing action that intentionally contravenes your oath to act for the greater common good of this commonwealth and its inhabitants, who will be subjected to increased health care costs and reductions in quality of life due to illness caused by particulate matter pollution, which, by the way, is a violation of the Clean Air Act. You are hereby ordered to withdraw the proposed eligibility changes to RPS Class 1 and Class 2, to which we do not now, nor have we ever, consented. You are notified hereby that your restored correct adherence to our constitutional frame of government and your accountability solely to the inhabitants of Massachusetts is a mandatory and lawfully required obligation. Your continued knowing, willful obstruction of our constitutional framework, and in particular Article 7 of our Declaration of Rights, is a criminal act. This is your notice to cease and desist all further corrupt activities.
Following Jeffrey, we have Bart Borisius.
These rule changes, there's no question that they will facilitate a large increase in the amount of logging that's done in the state. As has already been mentioned by several people here, the forest left intact can sequester large amounts of carbon. Logging produces a large emissions of carbon immediately and for many years as the root systems and other materials from the logging decompose. Some of that is sequestered in the ground, some of it is released into the atmosphere. It takes on average about 20 years for the average logging operation, after the average logging operation, for there to be a net sequestration as opposed to continued emissions. So continued emissions continue for at least 20 years after a logging operation, on average. Yes, there are individual forests with particular conditions, and of course, I'm not going to get into that. Carina Clemensen was a scientist in Sweden who was looking to study older forests and how much sequestration of carbon, how much storage of carbon was going on when the forests were older. She couldn't find any forests over 60 years in Sweden,
except on some islands in a very large lake in northern Sweden. There she found some large islands that had forests that had not been logged for 1,000 years, some that had been not logged for 500 years, 200, 100 years. The 1,000-year-old forests had rich, carbon-rich topsoil that was more than a meter deep. The 500 years, it was about half a meter deep. When you get down to the 100, it was only about 6 inches deep. And when you have a managed forest, it's even less than that, because managed forests continually get logged periodically, and so they can't sequester very much carbon. It's been shown that the richest sequestration goes on in places like the redwood forest, where, of course, the forests in some places have been left undisturbed for very long periods of time. I think it's important to understand that this increased logging is carbon emissions. It's carbon emissions from the logging. It's a separate thing when you burn everything. That's a separate issue. If you burn the trees that you've cut in biomass plants, then you get, of course, a lot more carbon in the atmosphere. But just increased logging alone is going to put a massive amount of carbon into the atmosphere. Thank you.
So following Bart, we have Amelia Tragen. Are either of them here? No. So next up is Mary Booth. Followed by Christine Tetrell.
Hi again. As you know, we Partnership for Policy Integrity and Conservation Law Foundation and others will be submitting a 30-page comment letter to you. The reason the letter has to be so long is that there's a lot of problems with your regulations. And I think you've really sort of screwed up on the science. You did the same thing before with the alternative portfolio standard when you decided to give subsidies to wood-burning thermal units, and you fudged that science too. I think you need to roll both sets of regulations back and actually follow the science that was laid out in the Manomet study. For instance, eliminating fossil emissions that are used in pellet manufacture and just not counting them is not a done thing. Everyone else in the world counts only that. You guys have decided to not count it based on nothing. One more quick point, since you're going to be getting so much input from us on paper. We've heard a lot today about the need to dispose of wood chips. I don't think that Springfield should have to be the garbage disposal for wood chips. Or any place, shouldn't have to be, for that matter. But, you know, interestingly, I mean, I do appreciate that sometimes there is a need to dispose of salvage wood. And interestingly, I came across an article recently about the 1938 hurricane and the enormous amount of blowdown, very big trees that was left after that, and precipitated a crisis, which was dealt with in a very unique way. They came up with a system for collecting that wood and warehousing it so that they wouldn't flood the market with it, and distributed it later, and it was all used. If we really do have a salvage wood problem in this state, and I won't deny that there are trees dying from gypsy moth caterpillars and things like that, then let's come up with a solution that actually preserves that wood and leaves the carbon sequestered in the wood, rather than sending it up the smokestack. Thank you.
So following Christine, we have Vivian Simon.
Hi, my name is Christine Tetro. Until a few months ago, I had lived virtually my entire life in Springfield. I still live just across the river, and I still consider Springfield my home. I didn't prepare any remarks. When I came here tonight, someone asked me if I would stand up and speak on behalf of the residents of Springfield.
I would like to, first of all, thank the people who came from other places to support us and to speak on our behalf. It's nice to hear that we're not alone. One of the things that I noted when I was listening to other people is all the people that I hear speaking in support of these changes are people who have a financial interest. Local people, even the people who stood up here and said, I live in Springfield, had a financial interest in seeing this plant built, that it creates jobs. I have many relatives in the trades, and I can tell you that they are turning away work right now. We do not need to build a poisonous biomass plant in Springfield to provide jobs to our union people. I also noticed that many of the speakers in favor of this biomass came from someplace else. They come from corporations not just outside of Massachusetts, across the country, one from Seattle, one from Europe. They don't have any vested interest in Springfield. We do. And let me tell you, even though I don't live here in the city anymore, my vested interest is my mom. She is 80 years old. She has asthma, has had it all her life. She relies on a couple of different inhalers. And like many elderly people, she rations what she used, her inhaler. She doesn't use it as often as she should because she can't afford it. That's another whole issue. But the fact of the matter is that this air is bad for her. There are days when she can't go outside. She can't step outside of her home because of the air quality here. So my vested interest is my mom. My other vested interests are my grandchildren. I have 5 grandchildren who live in this area. 4 of them live just outside the city, but they are downwind from where this biomass plant will be. I can see the Chicopee River from their front lawn, and so they will be affected if this is built. My 13-year-old grandson plays sports year-round. He's very active, but he can't play without his inhaler because the air of this city has affected his lungs. So those are my vested interests. And I hear what some of the people are saying about carbon being released from the wood chips that are already down and that sort of thing. But that carbon that's being released is released slowly and over time. The carbon that will be released out of that chimney comes out immediately, and that doesn't even include all the particulates and the other poisons that will be in our air after that happens. I read an article, this just feels very timely, just the day before yesterday, there was a report that was released by a think tank in Melbourne, Australia, and this is a quote. On our current trajectory, planetary and human systems are reaching a point of no return by mid-century, 30 years from now, in which the prospect of a largely uninhabitable Earth leads to the breakdown of nations and the international order. Now, I probably won't be here in 30 years, and maybe some of you won't be here in 30 years, but my grandchildren will be in their 30s, and 40s in 30 years. Your children, your grandchildren, if you're blessed enough to have them, will be in their 30s and in their 40s 30 years from now. We don't have time to plant trees that will be viable in 40 years, because in 40 years, we might not be here. But in the meantime, we live here in Springfield and we have to breathe this air. And I'm sorry that there's a pile of wood chips in Sturbridge, but that is not a good reason. I'm sorry, I don't need to be sarcastic, but that just infuriated me. That is not a good reason to poison children in Springfield because they got wood chips in Sturbridge. Thank you.
So, following Vivian, we have Jean Nguyen.
I'm Vivian Simon. We are in the midst of a raging climate emergency, and there is no debate about that. And nature is not negotiating with us about this. It is black and white. Either we stop putting carbon in the air, or we don't. Either we continue to build out the one way that we have for pulling carbon, which is our forests, or we don't. Einstein said, the definition of insanity is to continue to do the same thing and get a different result. If we continue to do what we have always done, we will continue to have the results that we have. And we are in a climate emergency. There's no magic wizard. There's no Harry Potter. It is us. We are the adults, and we are the ones who are tasked with the job of making sure that our children and grandchildren, and hopefully their children and grandchildren, have a livable planet. If people don't know what to do with these wood chips, then take the subsidies and hire a bunch of bright young scientists and they will figure out how to solve this. I want to say that I want you to imagine being 10 years old and someone coming up to you and ask you, what should the adults be doing now for your future? And if you don't know the answer to that, go ask the thousands and tens of thousands of children who are out in the streets all over this world, because they damn well know what the answer is. The answer is, we all know what the right thing to do is, and it is our job as adults to do it.
Following Jane, we have Glenn Ayers.
Hi, I'm Jane Nguyen with the Berkshire Environmental Action Team. Thank you for coming out this far west, at least. The Berkshires is another hour past here, and seldom does the state come out that far in this administration. The governor says that Massachusetts is still in the Paris Agreement, but his actions, DOER's actions, show that doesn't seem to be the case. Trash incineration. Please do not increase the amount of energy our utilities are required to purchase from the so-called waste-to-energy plants. These incinerators pollute our air and send tons of toxic ash to our landfills. We should not be subsidizing these incinerators. We should be reducing the amount of waste we create. Biomass. Biomass will not displace fossil fuels in Massachusetts. These would be new fuel-burning plants. They will displace clean energy and storage. They will keep ratepayers paying for fuel rather than moving to fuel-free energy, truly clean energy. Deadwood in the forest is decomposed by microorganisms that consume and integrate the carbon into their bodies, into the food web, as well as into the soil. Yes, some goes into the air, but certainly not anywhere near the amount that goes into the air from wood burning, not to mention the diesel trucks that carry the wood to these facilities. And indeed, we now are planning on burning wood in order to dry wood chips in order to then burn them. The definition is stupid. BEAT supports exemplary forestry, where the wood is manufactured locally into wood products we use locally. The state should be working harder to ensure that we're building wood products and using that wood locally that will be relatively permanently storing carbon. We're in a climate emergency. We need to stop burning stuff and use clean, renewable energy, efficiency, demand response, and storage. Thank you.
Following Glenn, we have Gia Neswald.
Hi, my name is Glenn Ayers. I'm from Greenfield, which is the city that passed a no biomass ordinance. And several years ago, and I recommend that all towns do the same thing to protect you against the stupidity of our state government. At the time that the city council considered that ordinance, which was adopted unanimously by the city council, the only person who spoke against that ordinance that evening was Wayne Breger from the DOER, who drove to Greenfield from Boston, I assume, to speak against an ordinance on behalf of the state. The only person in the Commonwealth who spoke against that ordinance. That tells you where DOER is. And I just want to point out the optics of this evening, where we have four white guys in suits sitting on a stage in an environmental justice community telling the people here that they don't care about you. They don't care about you. Governor Baker is a racist biomass pimp, the number one biomass pimp in Massachusetts. And I know he has political ambitions to be president someday, but the people should know and should call him for what he is. He's a racist. When he sends four white guys to this kind of an event, that shows what he thinks of the community. I'm not done. These regulations are terrible for a lot of reasons. I'm sure Mary will do a better job of pointing out all of the problems with them. But the main problem I have with them is that they do not comply with the Global Warming Solutions Act, Section 3D. And I hope that CLF sues DOER and takes you through the process that they do with DEP, so that we get another decision like the Kane decision that shows that DOER and DEP are not doing the job that they're supposed to be doing. These regulations make no provisions for an annual aggregate decrease in greenhouse gas emissions, which is required by Section 3D of the Global Warming Solutions Act. Apparently, there's no consultation happening with DEP to ensure that these regulations comply. We're going to file a public records request for all the consultation documentation prior to taking legal action. But these regulations, if they're enacted, and I understand that you don't care what we say, but if these regulations are enacted, they will be challenged in court.
Following Gia, we have Alan Rivera-Moore.
Hi, my name is Gia Neswald. Today I hail from Pocumtuck territory, sadly also known as Turner's Falls. And I am here as an ally to the people of Springfield.
Thank you.
To a citizen of this Commonwealth, and to one small steward of this earth. This is not about making our towns pretty and our roadsides tidy. This is not about renewable energy, nor is it about the Clean Air Act. This is about money. And we see you. Not going to be fooled by fancy, pretty names like renewable energy, renewable RPS. This is no time for Massachusetts to make a race to be great again and get the deal first. This is not time to be spewing the waste of those short-term profits on people based on race and class. The only race that's relevant right now is our race for survival. Any action, any consideration
for the former two is irresponsible. At this point, it's life or death. And you have a responsibility to us, the people, and we have said no. We said no a decade ago. We said no last year. We said no last month. And we're still saying no. And we will not accept a change to the RPS. And we will not accept deals overseas connected with this regulations loophole. We are going to be scrutinizing everything that you do in the world of policy. We are going to be watching every dollar that the state moves across our borders. We'll be on the streets. We'll be in your dreams, and we'll be in court. So thank you for your time.
Following Alan, we have Reverend Lauren Holm.
Good evening. I'm Lauren Holm. I'm the pastor of Bethesda Lutheran Church and East Congregational Church here in Springfield. And I speak to you tonight as the leader of Greater Springfield Campaign Nonviolence. Greater Springfield Campaign Nonviolence is strongly opposed to the biomass power plant in two areas: the harm to our environment and the harm to the people that live in the environment. Climate change is the greatest environmental threat facing our planet. The most important thing that we need to do is to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. The way to achieve this is through reducing and ultimately eliminating the use of fossil fuels. Scientific reports on the damage that has been done to the Earth are increasingly more alarming. The damage is worse than first thought and is advancing much faster than first estimated. The window to turn this around is quickly closing. There is no question that we need to move away from bad fuel usage, and we need to accelerate the shift to truly renewable fuels. Introducing a biomass plant is, in our opinion, the height of irresponsibility. In addition to damage to the climate, burning trash and biomass has a significant detrimental effect on the quality of our air and the health of all who breathe it. This is exacerbated by our geography, which causes our air and its pollutants to stall in the valley. Springfield has the highest rate of asthma in the nation. This keeps children out of school and adults out of work. Rates of heart disease and cancer are also elevated simply from breathing our air. In addition, this causes an overutilization of healthcare services. All of this has a negative effect on our local economy. We know that a biomass power plant will exacerbate air quality, which is already a serious situation. Intentionally harming the people who live here through negatively affecting their air quality is completely irresponsible. We recognize that economic incentives and disincentives can strongly influence individuals and corporations. At this crucial time in the life of our planet and its inhabitants, positive financial incentives must be available to encourage people and corporations to move in a positive direction for our planet and its inhabitants. Financially rewarding a corporation for harming the air quality for our citizens and further damaging our planet is morally and ethically wrong. In conclusion, we believe that the earth belongs to God and that we are stewards given the responsibility to use its resources in a responsible way, ensuring that the earth will sustain future generations. We now know that the use of fossil fuels causes significant harm to our planet. It falls to us to use what we know today to stop the current damage to our planet and its inhabitants,
and to reverse the damage done by the use of fossil fuels to whatever extent is possible. We need to be committed to using sustainable energy. Burning trash and biomass are not renewable energy. And rolling back the standard by considering this plant as renewable is a dangerous precedent for you to make. Therefore, we strongly oppose this biomass power plant. Can I get an amen?
Amen!
Next up, we have Katie Pyle, followed by Mary Jones.
Hi, everyone. First, I just want to thank you all for being here today to take public comments and for honoring the request of several groups, many of them who are in this room, who requested that a hearing take place in Springfield. My name is Katie Pyle, and I'm the environmental justice organizer for Arise for Social Justice, and we're based here in Springfield. This wasn't on my testimony, but I'm from Texas, and Massachusetts, y'all trying to do some Texas-style environmental stuff, and it's not cool. In addition to being an organizer, I also have over 10 years' experience in the social work field, and I'm a concerned citizen of Western Mass. Throughout my career and my life, I have seen firsthand the impact that climate change can have on a community. When I lived in Texas, I worked disaster relief efforts for several destructive hurricanes and fires and saw the severe impact to communities. I saw hundreds and hundreds of Red Cross beds in a warehouse where there was only one toilet to be shared by hundreds of people. And I don't say this to labor on these really tragic experiences, but rather to call attention to the immediate impacts of climate change. The frontline communities, like Springfield, carry the largest and the heaviest burden of climate change, and we must change our trajectory towards a sustainable future. Science has shown us that we are in the middle of a climate crisis. This is not something that we're facing at some unknown date. We are right in the middle of it. Many groups in this room worked diligently to end the subsidizing of biomass, and a compromise was made with the Patrick administration. But now the Baker administration and the DOER has gone back on this compromise. These proposed changes will pave the way for an increase in harmful emissions, ozone pollution, and negative health impacts. We've heard testimony here today on the health impacts and the science, but now we must find a way forward. This way forward must not only include, but center the voices of Black and Brown people, children, folks with disabilities and health concerns, Indigenous folks, poor folks, older adults, and other marginalized groups who have long been working for a better environment that we all will share. I will end by stating that I do not support the proposed changes to the RPS, and I do not support the allocation of millions in clean energy money to fund biomass plants. Thank you.
And next up, I believe we have Steve. Sorry if I mispronounced the name. I think it starts with an R.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Mary Jones, and I am the Western Massachusetts organizer for Toxics Action Center. At Toxics Action Center, we believe that everyone has a right to clean air and clean water, and we work side by side with communities that are facing pollution threats. And we are proud tonight to stand in solidarity with the residents of Springfield who are at the front lines of these regulatory changes to the renewable portfolio standard. As you have already heard from Springfield residents, elected officials, and community organizations, Springfield has some of the worst air quality in the state and the entire nation. Yet if these changes go through as planned, it would mean that the Palmer wood-burning plant, sited in the heart of East Springfield, would suddenly be eligible for $10 million in subsidies. To give you a sense of the public health consequences of a biomass plant like Palmer, I wanted to share a little bit more about the estimated air pollution emissions expected from this plant. These numbers are based on the conditional approval permit issued to Palmer Renewable Energy by the DEP in 2011. In other words, it is straight from the horse's mouth. This permit states that the plant is expected to release over 25 tons per year of sulfur dioxide, which is linked to asthma and respiratory problems, over 80 tons per year of carbon monoxide, which is linked to heart disease, and over 100 tons per year of total particulate matter, which is linked to lung disease, asthma, and more. In all, this plant is expected to release 215 tons of air pollutants each year into the air, which is over 1,000 pounds a day. That doesn't sound like the clean energy future that I want. What about you guys? Ultimately, these proposed changes to the RPS would end up putting a wolf in sheep's clothing. They would allow dirty biomass plants like the proposed Palmer plant in Springfield to masquerade as renewable energy while spewing toxic air pollutants that cause asthma, heart disease, cancer, diabetes, and more in our communities. And it would do it using $10 million of our money. The message from the public tonight, DOER, is loud and clear. That is the public that's not going to benefit financially from any of this. We, the people of Massachusetts, do not want the state to open up the renewable portfolio standard to support burning more wood and waste for electricity. Period. What do y'all think about that? We, the people of Massachusetts, want our ratepayer dollars, our hard-earned dollars, to go to clean energy and invest in solutions that don't pollute any communities in our state. Thank you.
So following Steve, we have Adele Franks.
Okay. My name is Steve Ryer. I'm from Franklin County in Massachusetts. I'll be brief. It's late at night, and a lot of very eloquent arguments have already been made. I'm a philosopher of science. I'm also an anthropologist by training. And, you know, the question I really have is, what really is motivating the renewable energy portfolio? Well, we're told that CO2 is emitted by the burning of fossil fuels, and that's absolutely correct, and that the increased amount of concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere causes the heat emitted from the planet to accumulate, and the planet warms up. Probably pretty reasonable. We're also told that fossil fuels also emit particulate matter, nitrous oxide, sulfur oxides, which are quite polluting and dangerous to public health. So the question I have is, why then are we talking about replacing fossil fuels with another source of energy, which isn't very much different? In fact, fossil fuels and what we call biomass are basically hydrocarbons. Chemically, there's hardly any difference between them. Physically, there's a difference. Yeah, you may have, one is in the form of a gas and the other is not. One is in the form of a solid that is not. But all what we call fossil fuels were once living plants and animals that are in the ground, subjected to heat and pressure, and the physical characteristics may have changed, but their chemical characteristics are pretty much the same. So when you burn biofuels, what we call biofuels, you're emitting CO2 into the atmosphere. You're also emitting particulate matter into the atmosphere. And if there's any difference in quantity, it's certainly not on the side of biomass. As a matter of fact, it's a bit worse. The amount of particulate matter you get at 2.5 microns, which is a very small particle, is about five times worse than the amount of pollution that you get from the burning of fossil fuel. Why would you do that? It makes no sense to me.
And so I have to ask myself the question, what really is motivating this change? What is really motivating it? It can't be science. We're both dealing with hydrocarbons. So what's motivating it? And I think we saw tonight, earlier tonight, I think we saw some of the evidence. Private enterprises that sort of have an in with the state and would like to have the state represent them for very commercial, very privately held reasons. And I ask this committee to reconsider, be logical in your approach to it. We can't not replace one hydrocarbon with another. They're both equally bad. So try to rise above the private sources that are exerting pressure on you and do the right thing in the public interest. Thank you.
And following Adele, we have Luette Hernandez.
Good evening. My name is Adele Franks, and I am offering my comments on behalf of Climate Action Now of Western Massachusetts in opposition to the proposed changes in the RPS. We all know, since the release of the latest IPCC report, that it's crucial at this moment in time to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. In fact, we have about 11 more years to make some drastic changes in reducing our emissions. Now, we would think that if DOER were taking this imperative seriously, that you would want to be strengthening your standards for burning biomass as part of Class 1 RECs and insist on using only the latest and best technology whenever such burning is allowed to receive credit as part of the RPS. So we don't understand the rationale for DOER's proposed changes that would weaken these requirements and therefore lead to increased greenhouse gas emissions. One example of our concern is with a proposed change that would remove efficiency requirements for generation units that burn forest salvage and non-forest residues. If efficiency standards are to be changed at all, we would reason that they should be strengthened, not eliminated. And that in order to assure that burning biomass for electricity is held to the highest and best standards possible. Now, if the industry is already using best practices and running highly efficient plants, as they said tonight that they are, why in the world would they need to have efficiency standards eliminated? This just doesn't make any sense. Regarding the amount of trash that could be burned to generate electricity to qualify for RPS programs Class 2 RECs, the incentive does not have any apparent motive. Increasing the financial incentive and increasing the amount of trash burned for electricity does not appear to have any merit. And there's just no justification for the resulting increase in pollution that our residents would be exposed to. Finally, regarding the solar program, the proposed changes to the SREC 1 program violates the original intent of the program and its announced benefits. Changing the rules midstream would significantly undermine consumer confidence in the solar industry and, of course, in the trustworthiness of our regulatory agencies. And both would reduce the consumer demand for solar, which is, of course, a truly clean source of energy. So in conclusion, I want to point out that when Massachusetts residents lobbied their state legislators to support an increase in the RPS in the last legislative session, it was with the understanding that it would rely on clean, renewable energy such as solar and wind. Yet the proposed RPS changes would use ratepayer dollars to encourage burning biomass and trash, which are by no means clean sources of energy. No matter what you want to say about it, they are not, and it just doesn't pass the lab test. So allowing these regulatory changes to move forward would betray the legislative and popular intent of the RPS increase and work against decreasing our greenhouse gas emissions, which we need to do in order to preserve a livable climate. We urge the DOER to withdraw the proposed changes to the RPS regulations. Thank you.
And next we have Dr. Joseph Stubblefield.
Good evening. Thank you for allowing us to speak. My name is Yvette Hernandez. I live on Newland Street in Springfield. That's the north end in Springfield. That's the very heart of where the amount of children with asthma exist. And as a single mom, all three of my children were born with asthma. As a single mom, it was me that had to go to the emergency room whenever they got sick. They relied on me to be able to feed them. And for me to be able to feed them, I had to be at work, but couldn't be at work that often if I was in the emergency room worrying about my children's health. It is in the North End where most of the children already have asthma because of conditions of the school that they attend. It is in the North End where we have right there the highway and increasing the amount of traffic that is going to go into the incinerator, as I heard earlier, will definitely be very devastated. I've been a social worker for over 21 years. I know the health impact that it has asthma on the education of children, that it has on parents and grandparents as myself that have to stay home to care for their loved ones who are ill and sick. It seems like not long ago we were having this hearing, and to think that we're having it again is preposterous. It really hits home. I have a lot of respect for my brothers and sisters of the building trades, but my health come first. My children's health come first. My grandchildren and my neighbors' health come first. And I am opposing this incinerator to be built right in my backyard where I can't, or my children are unable to breathe. I am a grandmother of a child who went to school one day at 11 years old. And mom had to be called to go to the emergency room. And that child, after being discharged from the emergency room, went home, collapsed, and died. I did not come here prepared. A lot of people came with very eloquent statements. I'm coming to you with the kindness of my heart, begging, please don't build no incinerator next to me. Don't. Thank you.
Next we have David Gabby.
Hello, I'm Bill Stubblefield with the Wendell State Forest Alliance. I'm a trained biologist with a PhD in evolutionary biology and ecology from Harvard University, and I stand before you in full and steadfast opposition to the proposed changes to the renewable portfolio standard. They amount to a double assault on human well-being, and they come with a cruel and costly twist. The first assault on human well-being is a devastating attack on our forests. One has only to look at the southeastern United States to see what devastation industrial scale wood burning causes. No, we can't bring that to Massachusetts. Science shows us that forests are the best means we have to actually take carbon out of the atmosphere, a critical necessity. because even reducing fossil fuel use dramatically is not enough to protect us from catastrophic climate change. And the proponents of these changes ask us to believe the impossible, taking thousands and thousands of tons of carbon out of our forests will increase carbon sequestration. Don't buy this junk science. Don't burn our future. The second assault on human well-being is that biomass energy is dirty energy. It pollutes our environment even more than fossil fuel. This is because it is a very low energy density fuel, which means you have to burn vastly more of it to get the same energy out. Let science speak. Save our health. Finally, adding insult to injury, we come to the cruel and costly twist that the ratepayers of Massachusetts are expected to subsidize this insanity. This is a great con job worthy of the demented gangster clown in the White House, not the great Commonwealth of Massachusetts. I beg of you, don't buy this scam. Don't steal our future. I call on the DOER and the citizens of the Commonwealth of Massachusetts to oppose these changes. Fight this assault on reason, which exacerbates global warming, attacks our health with dirty air, forces itself on the least among us to resist it, and charges us for the privilege. I'm not talking about some never-never land in a galaxy far, far away. This is here. This is now, and this is urgent. I beg you, stop this insanity. Don't burn our future. Thank you.
So, is David Gabby here?
I'm sorry?
David Gabby?
Yeah.
Okay. Next, we have Karen Martin. Nope. Salita Hudson, followed by Laura Britton.
Good evening. I'm Sarita Hudson. I'm Director of Programs and Development at the Public Health Institute of Western Massachusetts, and I run the Pioneer Valley Asthma Coalition. At the Public Health Institute, we were founded over 20 years ago, and our vision is that everyone will have what they need to lead a healthy life. We need clean air to lead a healthy life. The Pioneer Valley Asthma Coalition is made up of a coalition, a community partnership of healthcare organizations, local public health agencies, housing organizations, community agencies, academics, community members, and we are all working to improve the quality of life for individuals, families, and our communities affected by asthma. So you've heard already what I was going to say, which is this is we have got this designation as the asthma capital for the second year in a row. And so I'm not going to talk to that. It's in here. You can see all the statistics. But I really want to speak to the health inequities that are experienced here in our communities in Springfield and Holyoke, where you have people of color impacted so much more than white people. We see Latinos in the emergency room 5-6 times as much as whites, and African Americans 3 times as much as whites. So this is, so we are talking about an impact on people who are more vulnerable. We're talking about environmental justice communities. But I want to talk about a family that we are serving through our Healthy Homes program. These are folks who are only eligible through this because their children or themselves have been in the emergency room or have been hospitalized for asthma. And today in our case review, we talked about a family where the parents have to have a job. The father works during the day, the mom works at night because they're afraid for their daughter to be left alone without one of the parents. They won't let this child go out and play with the other children because of her asthma. This is the kind of impact it has on people's lives, where they can't get to work, they can't have a normal life because they have a child that they are worried about. And that's this is what I want you to think about when it comes to thinking about changing the standards around biomass. We have vulnerable communities here in Springfield, in Holyoke, in Chicopee, up and down the Pioneer Valley. Since it's getting late, I won't walk through the air pollution impact on health. It's not just asthma, it's cardiovascular disease. It is for premature birth. It is the impact on lungs that never will develop to their fullest because of exposure to pollutants in the air. I'm not going to talk more about the health effects specifically related to biomass. Some of the other folks have spoken to that. We can talk about the cancer risk from burning wood and whatever carcinogens that might be in the wood smoke. There's particulate pollution, which has been shown to be dangerous at any level. So I'm going to leave all of this in my testimony. And I just want to leave you with, this is, I believe, and I've only been working with the Asthma Coalition for 6 years, but I think this might be the fourth time that I have testified about biomass. I only have to go and recycle everything because it seems like this keeps coming up. And and even when we take two steps forward, it is one step back. The Springfield passed in 2017 a strong, healthy, just climate action resilience plan, and the Commonwealth has a Global Warming Solutions Act. And both of those call for ambitious action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. These changes make no sense in the face of those legislation and those plans, where we really see that the Commonwealth and the city of Springfield are taking steps, planning for reducing greenhouse gas emissions and improving the health of vulnerable communities. So I ask you to please, I urge you to not allow these proposed changes around biomass. Don't incentivize something that will cause harm. And let's look to incentivize other forms of renewable energy which do not have these negative health impacts. Thank you.
Next we have Sayer Bay, Monte Washington, Nyla's Williams, Abdiada, or Tijan Cole. Next we have Rabbi Shlomo. I'm sorry if I get the last name. It starts with Y. Can't see the rest. Followed by our last person signed up for the night, Kirsten Beatty. So did you sign into the sign-in sheet or the testimony sheet? Okay, so there's no names left on the testimony sheet, but we can allow you to speak.
Hi, my name is Shlomo Yaffe. I'm the rabbi for the Association of Orthodox Congregations of Greater Springfield. I live in Springfield, actually exactly on the line with Longmeadow, but air moves all over the place. First, I want to thank you for being here to talk about this regulation. It can't be easy. And one of the core dictums in our tradition is the obligation to judge, no matter how passionate the issue is, to judge everyone favorably. And I think all kinds of reasons and ideas have brought us here. But at the same time, since the overwhelming scientific evidence tells us that this particular type of plant, and we've heard this 1,000 times, exacerbates problems that are particularly prevalent in Springfield and therefore in the areas immediately around it, somehow there has to be a way for us, in attempting to give people work, to deal with renewable energy, and putting all the arguments aside, there has to be a way for everyone in this room tonight, including you and the departments you represent, to accomplish this without making a very heart-rending and very serious health problem worse. And then there's the global issue. Everything's been said. I think the only thing left to do is, we heard a lot of voices and a lot of genuine passion, is somehow for us to reach across our lines and our borders and talk to each other and make sure that we have the healthiest possible community here, that we do just because we don't live in a city doesn't mean we don't care. And just because we have a job or a position in the bureaucracy also means doesn't mean we don't care. And I think if we all discuss this together, we probably can find ways, collectively, we can find ways to push renewable energy, to create employment, and yes, wealth, it's not a dirty word, create wealth from private enterprise in a way that also saves the planet, and more to the point of the moment, enhances and lifts up the health of the citizens of Springfield, the children and elderly of Springfield, and not pushes it down. There's no reason that we, and this is, you know, another saying of ours, there's no reason to lift yourself up by pushing someone else down. Thank you.
All right. My name is Kirsten Beatty. I'm with Last Chewy Laws. And it seems like I keep coming to hearings, and usually when I look at the people there, they're concerned. I can really tell they're concerned. And then at the end, there's nothing that happens. And I feel like Governor Baker is always behind everything that has happened at the Department of Health, at the Department of Public Utilities, every single thing. And I know he must have political ambition, but when I look at the people in the departments, what I'm wondering is, why am I not hearing anything from the people in the departments? You know, it's like a moral thing. When you have a job, at some point you're going to say, excuse me, Governor Baker, I need to persuade you, and if you don't agree, then you need to take a stand. And I feel like, I wonder why people don't take more stands, why people don't say, we at the DOER do not agree with us. Alright, so what I actually wrote is that I would like to emphasize that all the research is showing that the large old trees are going away and that our trees are not replenishing. The reason they're not replenishing is probably because of climate change. The other aspect is probably connected to all the pests. And then the last aspect is another economic problem, all the wireless. So the research out there is showing that the wireless, that is a huge economic industry, is also a threat, causing destruction to the fertility of the soil. It interferes with the calcium intake of plants. They have to have that. And it interferes with photosynthesis, which means that they can't grow. So when they were looking at the rainforest records, they observed that they're experiencing great mortality and slower growth. They are not replenishing. And all around, when I look at my own town, the trees are also dying. And we actually had a man come here and say all the trees are dying in his town. So when you have this thing that the old trees are dying, it's not just that they're dying and that the climate is a problem. There's also an issue that the genetic diversity is also being lost, because we have in New England the chestnut, the beech, the ash, the hemlock, the elm are all struggling. And then when you have old trees, these are the ones that make more seeds, they replenish the forests, and they support all the wildlife, because the old trees are where the wildlife can go because they're so big. And then, when you look at the world, in 2018, Brazil cut down over 5,000 square miles of forest, an area approximately equal to Connecticut. Export of Ghana, in 2018, they cut down over 80% of its forest. And trade wars are causing Brazil to cut down even more forest to supply China. And the Harvest Forest reports that we are also losing 65 acres a day. I guess in the end, I would like to ask people to also attend the hearing June 11th to talk about the wireless legislation at the Joint Committee of Public Health. Because that's also an environmental issue. It's on June 11th, Tuesday. Or please support our group. I hope that Governor Baker will actually take a stand to change this, because, I mean, at this point in time, I can't say that I would ever elect him. I think I would write against him. I can't see how he has any idea that anything like this could go, or all the other things that he seems to just continue to do.
So I do want to let other people have a chance to talk. I just wanted to note that we are almost an hour past our scheduled time and a half hour past our room reservation. So if people can be brief.
I'll be fast. I thought I signed up. I couldn't figure out what was going on. Anyway, my name is Janet Sinclair. I live in Chilburn Falls. One thing I just wanted to talk about a little bit more is just the personal impact on communities when these policies are written in Boston. In Greenfield, we spent thousands of hours, hundreds of people, thousands of hours to fight a biomass power plant in Greenfield. Same thing happened in Russell and same in Springfield. What we did also while we were fighting those projects is that we knew that the only way that we were really going to succeed is if the renewable portfolio standard changed. And so then we spent hundreds of people, spent thousands of hours collecting thousands and thousands of signatures to try to fight this project. We knew it was the only way that we would win, and we did. And so I'm really sorry it didn't happen for Springfield. There's different standards there, but different things are going on in Springfield. But the only reason we won in Greenfield and Russell was because of the renewable portfolio standard that we have now. And so this is so difficult for us that we spent so much time, and these were people that really cared when we did this, and we negotiated with the state, and now you're backtracking not that much longer. It's really, really hard for us. But I also want to just read to you a quote from Mark Silva, who was the commissioner of DOER at the time, speaking about the passage of these regulations that we currently have. He said, "The adoption of this revised regulation and guidelines demonstrates the Patrick Murray administration's commitment to advancing the Commonwealth's clean energy goals and greenhouse gas reduction commitments based on sound science and prudent policy." This is what
was quoted in the paper on August 21st, 2012. And as somebody else mentioned from Greenfield, we're so awesome there, really. What is different? What happened? This is ridiculous for you to be doing this. And it's an insult to everyone who signed that petition. It was 120,000 people at least that signed our petition. Hundreds of thousands of dollars were spent on that petition. The immense amount of effort that goes for a community fighting, you know, the people who get these projects put in front of them are Franklin County's the poorest county in the state. Springfield is a very challenged community. That's where you cite, that's where these things come. People who have no resources, no money, are up against these industries. The people that are least able to fight for themselves are forced to fight their own government. This is just a travesty. Thank you.
I'd like to testify.
Thank you. I'm late because I spent 3 hours with my wife at the asthma doctors. And I'd just like to be brief. Thank you to that person who suggested giving all... Okay, thank you to that person who suggested giving some subsidy money to scientists to find a solution. I'm happy to tell you there already is a solution. We can do it tomorrow. We've already been doing it. It's called pyrolysis. Under the process of pyrolysis, you heat biomass with zero oxygen in a closed chamber under a vacuum, no combustion, no emissions. What happens is you break down the molecules of the biomass, which could be wood, it could be hemp, it could be short-term crops, it can be waste wood. And by the way, the Manomet study sent out an addendum that stated the study did not apply to waste wood. So we need to look at that. But it breaks down the biomass into smaller molecular components, which when recombined into shorter hydrocarbon chains, produce bio-oils, biogas, and what is not able to be volatilized is pure carbon, and that carbon was the carbon, pardon me, I have a Boston accent, south of Dorchester, that carbon is... the carbon that used to be in CO2 of the atmosphere. We take that carbon, put it into the soil to replenish depleted lands, use in construction, to use in asphalt, to sequester it permanently using pyrolysis, and I have done this, and you're welcome to come and see pictures of my system. I can remove more carbon and sequester more carbon in 6 hours than a mature forest can do in 1 year. I don't need that. Others came here and spoke for a long period of time. I'm coming here to offer you a solution, so I don't need to hear that. We can take the oils to replace fossil fuels. We can take the gases to run the systems, so they are energy negative, and essentially we can produce a non-fossil based energy system that removes carbon from the atmosphere rather than adding carbon to the atmosphere. We can use biomass to remove carbon from the atmosphere. That carbon can also be used to clean contaminated agricultural wastewater, effluents from sewage treatment plants, clean toxins from contaminated soils, and other places. The carbon, it's a carbon negative process that can replace our carbon positive fuel systems and add and remove atmospheric CO2. For biomass, we can use land-based biomass, which is fast-growing hemp. We could use fast-growing sunflowers, short-cycle crops, so it doesn't take so long to reabsorb the CO2 coming out of, let's say, the biomass system. There's biomass in the oceans. There's millions of tons of biomass in seaweed within 100 miles of here that can be used to draw down carbon and create a carbon-negative fuel system. We can provide farmers, another endangered species, with opportunities to grow energy crops. We can provide local income for those folks. We can reduce the enormous amount of funds being sent to China for solar panels, which are among the most unclean forms of energy creation.
And I apologize, but just given the lateness of like the hour and how we're getting here, do you have a specific comment on the rule?
Yeah, the rule is I do support taking garbage out of the RPS, but I do support leaving biomass in the APS. And I think that when people are talking about the CO2 that's being put out, when you look at cradle to grave, that's just at the point of combustion. When you look at the amount of energy and carbon that's released from mining, exploration, building these systems, ships on the ocean, fuel, not to mention the children of ours that are killed in wars so some fat cat fossil fuel president at the top can get money, that is even more of a bad problem than CO2 coming out of an exhaust stack. So basically, I think we need to be thinking about the solutions of how do we draw down carbon, how do we use fast cycle crops, how do we use seaweed, and how to prevent clear cutting of forests. That's easy to do. You don't take down age-old trees. You only use waste wood. Two biomass plants, only two. One in Western Mass, one in Eastern Mass. That's it. We don't need any more than that to deal with our legitimate forest waste and the waste that comes from hurricanes and increasingly warm environment that Mass Audubon says we'll have. So there are solutions, and I would say that finally of that, the credits that I would get or that the biomass plant would get, let's take 10% of that, that's $1 million or more dollars a year, and put it towards allergies, because ultimately my wife is an asthma patient. What we found out is that allergies cause asthma, and not only is Springfield the number one asthma capital in the country, but it is the number five allergy capital, and it's allergies and trees and pollen and poverty and cockroach parts and dust mites that are causing the asthma.
Apologies.
And we need to deal with that. Thank you very much.
Hello. My name is Dennis Carr. I'm with the Wendell State Forest Alliance. I will take less than 2 minutes. Most of the arguments that I've heard in support of what you want to do were based on money. And I have no doubt that money is a, if not the prime mover behind these changes being suggested in the first place. The habit of allowing economics to trump all other concerns has been with us a lot longer than the complexities that that word has taken on. And I'm not going to try. We need to change that twisted thinking, and I have no illusion that I'm going to be able to do that in 2 minutes. So I would just like to point out how many people there are in Western Massachusetts, including myself, that are trained and practiced in nonviolent civil disobedience. And if the good work being done by people to try to stop this legislatively or legally or through their organizational work, if that fails to stop the trucks from showing up to build this plant, and the activists from Springfield put out a call, there's going to be a whole lot of us standing in the road saying no.
I had it all written out, but it's late. And so I just want to review. You are going against one of the poorest communities that's in this state. You can go home. You don't have to breathe the air. Your children don't have to suffer from asthma. But you're human beings. You have a heart. We all do. Even with the money and the confusion, even with the ideas of success that you've been given, you have a human heart. Please use that heart, because we are at a time right now in the world, and I'm going to speak for my indigenous relatives here, okay? Because that's a side that you people never listen to. I saw you in Amherst. It was, you know, you stifle a yawn, oh yeah, more of that. This is real. These are human lives. These are your brothers and sisters on this planet. We all are. Please, go back. No. Negative on the RPS changes. Do what your heart tells you. Because if you don't, your own children and grandchildren are going to come to you 12 years before it may be too late to reverse this whole thing. 12 years, that's not long, okay? What will you tell your grandchildren when they ask you why you didn't do everything that you could? Okay, we can do this. There's the sun, there's the wind, there's geothermal, there's tidal energy. There's so much. Please, do what you like. Thank you.
Thank you for staying this late. I think you're all aware of the current international political climate around climate crisis. You have a great opportunity here to pass legislation, not this legislation, but you have the opportunity to create legislation which will bring Massachusetts to net zero emissions by 2030 and maintain its status as a world leader in technology. People are willing and committed to do that, but we need the legislation to pass. You can do that, or you can pass the proposed legislation, but I think based on the spirit of the people you've seen here tonight and the 1,113 members and citizens of Massachusetts who have signed up and joined the Extinction Rebellion and the many other thousands of Massachusetts residents who are in other climate action groups, the only biomass you'll be able to burn if you pass this legislation is the piece of paper that you write it on. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Deborah Shamsky, and I just want to add one closing comment. I've been to a few events like this where representatives come out to Western Mass and listen to the people out here about particular issues. And I went to one that was really striking because at the end of the event, the officials who were up there summarized the whole event in a wrong light. So I want to be very clear. I was keeping track of the number of people speaking. There were only 7 people that were for what you want to do. And all the rest of the people here were against it. And I didn't notice you keeping tally, but I just want to make sure when you leave today, you remember that. The people spoke, and the majority, the bigger majority of people, were all in favor of not having biomass, of not decreasing the standards, but increasing them, and subsidizing green energy and not anything else. And I think if you don't want to believe us, you don't have to, but you can read. There are public libraries that get books out all the time. If you're not familiar with this topic and you're held accountable for making decisions for our lives and for the future of our planet, please, don't spend your time watching TV. Read some good books and look at who's writing those books. Are they educators? Are they researchers? Are they people that know something about it? Or are they being pumped up by industry? You'll know which ones are the real books with the real truth in them. Please read them, because it's not only us that need to inform you. You need to inform yourselves. Thank you very much for coming and listening to us.
I just say thank you that you listened to everyone and took testimony from people. It's longer than you thought you were going to need to do, but thank you for listening and not cutting people off. Thank you.
Absolutely. Is there anyone else that would like to speak before we close the hearing?
Oh, me!
Okay.
It's 9:44 p.m. and the hearing is closed. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for listening.
Well done, GOVR.
Yeah. Are you? Wow.